Welcome back to another episode of Footballing with Ben Roethlisberger. My name is Spence, and I am joined here, as always, with two-time Super Bowl champion Ben Roethlisberger. That was pretty good.
Like that. I try and mix it up every time, but I don't know what I'm doing. I've probably done that one a few times, and I feel like it was brand new.
Which one did you just do?
The one I looked at you and then did the same thing. That's where I start my look.
We're going to make eye contact and then go.
When you wink at me, I'm going.
Right on, man. Hey, well, welcome back. And I say welcome back, and we're at your house.
Yes,
welcome back to your house. But welcome back to your house because you've been out of town for a little bit.
I have. I was literally on a beach this morning.
Yeah.
And
You messed up.
4 hours later, I was walking in snow. But you know what? I'm not mad about it in the sense that I want a white Christmas.
Yeah, I get it.
Because how many years has it been since we've had a snow like on Christmas? It's been a few years.
Yeah.
And I don't mind. Like, people are like, oh, I hate the cold. Like, where we were obviously at a beach where it was warm. And I was telling people, like, you know, on Christmas, it's supposed to be 2 degrees. And They're like, nope. Like, how do you do that?
Not here.
And I'm like, I don't mind it being that cold if I have snow.
Yeah.
I don't want the cold gray, no snow. Like, that's just not fun. If you're going to be cold, please give me snow.
Yeah. 100%.
So
I totally agree.
Friday is a chance. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yes. I remember meeting some guy in Florida who'd moved down there. He was from upstate New York. He moved down there. He lived there for 27 years. I was like, hey man, like what made you move down here? It's like, well, in 27 years, I've never had to shovel sunshine. I was like, this is a wise man right here.
Words of wisdom.
Yes. The wise man.
Well, and if there's the more snow there is, the less Christmas magic Santa has to use.
That's true.
I mean, he can just, you know, use the sled. The reindeer don't have to work as hard.
It's true.
Magic. It'd be so rooting for it. The kids are excited for it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Coors Banquet.
Oh, give it to him.
Ooh. Thank you.
I do really like those mugs, man. And it's good that you brought those mugs back
That's
out.
That's a 16-ouncer in my hand, though, just so you know.
It's good you brought those out because tonight's a special night.
It is a special night.
It's the first of all, it's the episode before Christmas. This is the last episode we're going to do before Christmas.
Yes.
And in true Ben fashion, you had to call in some big guns for it.
I did.
Because we're not here alone.
I know. If you notice the shirt I have on.
Yeah, I was curious about that. Are you suiting back up?
It's just a footballing shirt.
Yeah.
But this other one that I have on is a Bucco shirt.
That's
you
right.
Know why?
What is that?
Because we're going to cross over for the first time in football and
history.
Oh. We have our first other sport crossover. We had Bob Pompeiani on, which isn't sport. He's all sport. So that's crossover that way.
Is that how you pronounce his name?
Bob Pompeiani. tell Cook and Joe to leave you alone, Bob. Anyway, we're going to cross over into some Buccos baseball tonight with none other than Pittsburgh's own Neil Walker.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. Neil,
thank you for joining us. How special is this one? I had to call some favors in for this one. I'm just saying.
Yeah, right.
I had to call some. So I got my Buccos jersey on. It's actually a Roethlisberger jersey.
But that's true.
It's still the closest I have, so it works.
Are you suiting up? You playing?
No. I went to throw the first pitch out the other day. Did you hear about that? Oh, man, I was so nervous.
That 60 feet, 6 inches is a lot longer than it seems.
I tried to practice like in the yard and I was like, I walked it off and I was throwing to my son and it wasn't, I was like, it's going to be easy. Yeah. I'm going to throw a knuckleball. I'm going to throw something fun. And I got out there and I was like, this is so much further than I practiced. Like it looks a lot further. And I'm like, nope, no knuckleball. Just get it across the plate. It didn't matter. To me, it was just all about getting across the plate. Yeah. And I went to throw it, and I was like, okay, reach back and just let it go. Not hard, just throw it. And I like short-armed it and everything. But hey, I throw a strike. That's all that matters.
That's a lonely place out there. That bump is a lonely place.
Did you
place.
Ever have to do that?
One time, my last year in the big leagues with the Phillies, it was a COVID year. And typically how it works, I was a utility guy, so I didn't play a whole lot. And, you know, their lineup was loaded. And we had like a 3-4-game stretch where our starters just got – the crap beat out of them. So like, you know, the bullpen's getting worked over. And then like day 3 or 4, you're sitting in the dugout and you see the coach kind of start looking down at the end of the dugout, like, and you're thinking, oh no, he's going to ask one of us to go pitch. And I knew that I was coming kind of on the end of my leash as far as my career. And I was like, you know what? This is my best chance of doing it. Yeah. So he says, who wants to do it? I said, I'll do it. I ran in like into the indoor cage, threw a couple pitches. I got out there and was so scared. I was so scared. I couldn't
even believe it. We all get blown out at the time? Like,
yeah, it? Yeah. It was, okay, you know, so it was like 9-2, yeah, you know, okay. And they're just trying to not use bullpen guys. And you're standing. And the thing about it is, you, like for me, I played infield for so long. So I always remember sitting back there and be like, how's this guy not throwing strikes? Like, you know, 6, 7, 8 balls in a row. And you're like, come on, you know, you're not saying anything.
You're sitting out there. Let your defense work.
Exactly. And you get out there and you're like, wow, that's like, it's like throwing in this zone right here. And so I walked a guy and I got two guys to fly out. So,
no way.
So I got a 0 ERA in the big leagues. I'll take that to my grave.
Congratulations. Hey, that's Hall of Fame material there.
I'll take it.
That's a closer.
Zero.
I've always wondered what that was like when they pulled like position players into pitch. They kind of want to, don't they? A little bit, yeah, like, and if you give up a shot, who cares?
Nobody
cares.
It's like, a win-win.
Yeah, it's just fun, right?
You're not going into a game with something on the line.
But in reverse, if you're up the bat and the guy comes in and strike out,
it's terrible. It's terrible.
It's the worst, right? Because it's a lose-lose for the batter because you're supposed to do something, but if you don't, you're
in the game's over. Typically, the game's over. It's like the eighth or ninth inning or something, and you're just like, can we just go on to tomorrow? Like, let's take a shower. Let's get out of here. And you're like, oh crap. I'm up like fifth this inning. I'm definitely getting up. I don't even want any parts of this.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. That is great. I didn't even think about to ask you that. I was thinking like, what question should I ask Neil? Yeah. I didn't even think till we were talking about that is so funny to me. Like,
I would be terrified. Yeah. I'd be terrified to do that. Hey man, you want to go pitch? Nah, not today. Not like right. This. Nope.
No. I never wanted to do it until I was like, you know what? I probably won't get another chance at this.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a shot at it.
I think it's one of those. I always wanted to catch a kickoff one time, not run it back. Yeah. I was going to fair catch it, do whatever. I always wanted to do that once. And I thought it'd be just to like see a ball in the air and just do something. But I don't want that, but I thought it would have been fun. So something like that.
As soon as you said that, I'm like, brother, I'm
fair catching it all day. I'd be at the 1 yard line fair catching. Yeah. I'll fair catch at the one. Well, what about like, would someone like, what's the shortstop? Cruz, right? For the Pirates right now. Yeah. Does he's got like a hose.
Yeah.
Like, would that correlate though to pitching or not really? Cause could he like get up there and throw some heat and get some?
Oh yeah. 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 I bet if he got up on the mound, he'd probably be throwing 92 to 95.
Yeah.
There's no idea. He probably has no idea where it's going. It's so mechanical. Pitching is just so mechanical. Like, yeah. These guys have been doing it since they were.
He can't get like a running start and do like the whole thing with it. Yeah. Because that's been fun to watch him. Obviously, his. I mean, what a. Oh my goodness. Aaron Rodgers just threw a really bad interception. Mm. And we are watching the Monday Night Football game, which we'll get your thoughts on football, but that was really bad interception.
There's a few unicorns in baseball that you watch these guys on a daily basis, you know, like Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. I got to play with them 1 year with the Yankees, and you just watch these guys on a daily basis. You see the body, you see the movements, and you're like, dude, you should have played football. Like you should.
Yeah, he's huge. Aaron Judge is huge, right? I've never met him, but he's huge. He's
6'7", 250, 4% body fat, just absolutely huge. So there's guys that you look at and you're like, you're not playing in the same league as the rest of us.
Wow. Did I tell you my Yankee story? I don't know if I told this story on this show yet. If I did, sorry, fans. But I'm going to tell you the story. So we went up to the playoff game this year. Benjamin's Aaron Judge now. I mean, isn't everyone loves Aaron Judge right now, right? So he goes up. He's got his Aaron Judge jersey on. We're going up to Yankee Stadium. And we go in. We're right in the suite entrance. There's this huge, like, Babe Ruth – like picture on the wall.
Yeah.
So my son doesn't know a lot about the history of the game, but yeah. I was like, buddy, see that guy right there? I'm like, that's probably the like best baseball player ever. He goes, Aaron Judge is second, right? Sure, pal. Like, in your mind, yes. But nothing against Aaron Judge. Obviously, he's a stud. But there's a lot of guys up there, pal. But it was so the way he just hit it with a Aaron Judge too, right? Like, sure.
I've never felt smaller as a baseball player than my time with the Yankees. You know, you park kind of inside and then they have a little tunnel walkway to the clubhouse and you walk by and you see their retired numbers for the Yankees is ridiculous, right? There's, I don't know how many, but if I had to guess, there's probably 20 plus numbers that are retired and you walk by and you're walking through this little hallway to the clubhouse and you see like, you know, Babe Ruth, you know, all these guys and you're like, I'm insignificant. Yes.
It is, and that was what was cool too. My dad, obviously, I'm a Yankee fan. My dad grew up a Yankee fan, and so it was like going up through the suites, yeah. right? And every suite is like, hey, Evan, sit those down right here. We're going to have something special.
Hey, Evan, how you doing?
Doing all right. We're going to have a little something special here. Don't touch him yet, Neil. Relax, Neil. Yeah, slap his hand. All right. We're going to explain this in a second. Okay. You're going to be our guinea pig.
Okay.
But it was cool because all the suites, like every suite number had like the retired or yeah. what players wore that. Maybe I don't know if they were retired necessarily, but whoever wore it.
Right.
And so we're walking down the hallway and I'm like, we're like walking. I'm like, where'd my dad go? And I look back and he's like taking pictures of like, you know, like they had old newspaper articles of like Maris and man, oh. I mean, all this Yogi and all these things. And it's just like, jeez. Are you kidding me? Like,
yeah.
Benjamin loves the Jeter and the, you know, and I do too. Like, that's why, you know, Jeter and, yep. and Bernie, all those guys yep. and Posada and Mariano. I mean, all those guys are so good. And then dad's like, are you kidding me? What about like, look, you got Mara, you got all these old timers too. So it's just such a, it was epic going in there and getting yeah. all that stuff.
Very
so
iconic.
It was, yeah. it was awesome. Yeah. So I noticed you're looking at this, mm-hmm. but
what, smells unbelievable.
What we're going to do, we're going to kind of use you as a guinea pig here.
This okay. is like the hottest one that's ever been on the face of the earth.
Oh, no. So this is not a hot ones challenge. We did do no. the hot ones challenge once.
But if you want to jump in, we have the sauces. Yeah,
no, sauce right there. No. This is not. That's what we're doing. We're going to try this on you.
Okay.
All right. Evan is bringing us food down. Okay. Because the premise of our...
Oh, yes.
the premise oh, of our yes. show is faith, family, football, yep. beer.
Thank you.
So what we're going to try now is do faith going into the new year and as we... move forward with this if we keep doing it. Faith, family, football, food,
love it,
beer. And so what we did is we're going to have Evan kind of bring something to the table, okay?
Yep.
So what he did is we're going to try and correlate it with our guest.
Okay.
So like, you know, you play baseball, you're from Pittsburgh. So yep. Evan,
yes.
tell us what we have here. Start wherever you want to start.
All right. To start, you got the plate of wings right there. They're smoked wings.
Oh.
The ones closest to Neil are... truffle hot, so it's a little bit of truffle oil, some hot sauce, wow. a little bit of sriracha seasoning. And then the ones on the right are a chili lime and roasted garlic. Mm. And then two different pierogies here.
Why why pierogies?
Because of Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. Yin's <Yeah. laughs> guy's going to love this.
Right. I love it.
The one on the left is the classic, like cheddar, potato, yep. onion.
Mm-hmm.
And the one on the right is a little unorthodox, but it's pulled pork and beer cheese.
Whoa.
So beer cheese on top.
Well, what kind of beer did you use for the beer cheese?
I used Yingling.
Oh, why? Because wow. it's local. Yes, it we is. Did it. So these are all handmade. You yep. you made these by hand, none, yep. not frozen. No. Everything's just ready
this,
to go, right?
This ain't no Miss T's. You ain't rocking with no Miss no T's Miss here? T's. Okay.
No disrespect. yeah. And they're not thin like Mrs. T's.
There's something to them.
Yeah.
yeah.
Do you recommend which one we go first?
I mean, you might as well try the new one, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
You're the boss, Evan. Thank you, Evan. Appreciate
very
you
very much. Yes. Okay. We're looking forward to your new segment. It's going to be Evan's segment.
Yes.
Fans, if you guys want the recipes, we'll have Evan get them on.
Oh, we're about to have a football and cookbook, Chef Whoa. Evan.
Whoa.
Hot. Beer is not. We've got to mess
all your hot. All right, Neil. Let's give a breakdown of these pierogies.
That's incredible. I know pierogies. Right.
A resident pierogi expert.
I'm very German, okay? I come from an Irish-German family, but I know pierogies. Mm-hmm. These are good pierogies.
Hey, man. Yeah. You heard it here first. mm. What do you think,
good.
Ben?
That's good.
Which one did you try?
The beer cheese.
Mm, yeah.
There's people that watch the show, and they comment, Ben's yeah. always snacking.
Hey, I mean, bro.
What can you say?
The
cheese is very good. Yingling cheese. Yingling
I know he
beer.
Came. I was setting up. He came down here and grabbed a Yingling. I was like, what's up, Ev? He goes, oh, I'm about to make some beer cheese. I'm like, oh, you can just make that, huh? That's pretty cool.
All right, if they were going to go Western Ohio, if Evan was going to go Western Ohio on you, what do you think he would go with?
A Western Ohio native Ohio. Pierogi? Like, what style pierogi? No. Dude, that's real good.
Northwest Ohio.
That's so good.
What's a food?
Yeah. Well, I would say that Finley's known for it's like Dietz's chocolate. That's not food, but like the yep. ice cream and chocolate and Dietz's. Mm-hmm. Shout out, Natalie, Brian, chocolate over Oreos. I don't know what. I'd have to ask my friends. My friends from there too.
Buckeyes. Yeah, Buckeyes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that classic's good too.
That's what I said. I think they're both bomb, but that's. That's fantastic.
Okay.
Native Yinzer, how do you rate it out of 10?
Mm.
I'm probably at a like an 8.5 to 9.
Wow.
That's a good pierogi.
That's a high score.
Very good. And it went down fast.
What about you, Ben?
I'm a ginger too now.
I know you're not native, but I mean, it's in your blood.
I'm a ginger.
you've earned the right.
I've never had a pierogi at the park. Did they sell them at the park?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm honest, I've never had them at PNC.
They're doing good, though.
It's really good.
Yeah.
That's as good as a pierogi I've ever had. Now I said, I don't have nearly as many as Neil has.
Mm-hmm.
That's spectacular.
What did you do out of 10? I know it's hard. I know it's hard to...
Nine and a half. I mean, I don't know what would be better.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had a pierogi better than this. And I'm not just gassing Evan up. I'd be honest with him, but...
Mm-hmm. You can feel the love in that.
Yeah.
You
know?
All right.
Shout out to Evan.
Evan, thank you. We'll get the recipe. So we're going to do... We're going to start doing food with every guest. We're going to try and do food every mm-hmm. guest, have an Evan segment. Maybe show some recipes for anybody out there that wants to wonder what he does. And when I asked him to do this, no joke, this is what Evan does. I said, Evan, we'd like to do this and maybe put the recipes on. He gave me this look like. And I'm like, oh, you not want your recipes out there? He goes, I don't really do recipes.
Yeah, this boy ain't measuring anything.
He's just like, oh, let me do it. I'm like, all right, well, I'll give you some props.
That's
like,
how you know you're talented.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you want to just write something down, you can. Like,
right. So. He's like, hey, man, how much salt you put in that? A little bit.
Just a pinch.
Hey, man, how much barbecue salt? Smidge.
Yeah.
Just a smidge.
So we're going to try and do it. Like I said, we got the pierogies for the Pittsburgh.
Love it.
The wings, like were baseball. I mean, I know it's maybe not a baseball thing, is it?
Smoked wings, though. I mean, it's hard to go wrong with any type of smoked wings.
So, there's no reason to wait. If you want to dive in, right. Can I get you another Coors Banquet?
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
This is a very
I don't know if wings. Yes, yeah, smoked wings are baseball, but you eat some smoked wings and watch baseball and tell me you ain't having the time of your life.
Man.
You know what I mean? All right, Neil, what are we working
with
here?
That's crazy.
Which one did you dive into? Because
lime chili sauce?
The lime chili.
Smoked wing.
I mean,
that's hard. Have you ever eaten in the dugout? Not like
a meal. You ever eat a meal in the dugout?
Not like seeds and gum. Like full fledged, like, hey, I need the clubby to go up and give me something. You know, like I need something.
Well, here's the thing about major league clubhouses or in conjunction with the dugouts is that they're usually pretty close. So in between innings, like if I'm a position player and it's in between innings and I'm not up until like seventh or eighth, like I'm probably going inside and like hanging out for two outs. Seriously. And you might be looking at some video.
Baseball is my favorite sport now. Dude.
You might be grabbing a Gatorade or some food or something along those lines. But I can't say I've always been a little nervous about like having a full plate of something in my lap, like in the dugout.
No nachos.
Hey, man, Neil got a burrito from Chipotle down there. What's he doing there?
I have seen guys like take have hot dogs or something and. And like make sure the camera's not on them, and they're in the corner, and they're hammering a hot dog like in the sixth inning, and you can't get mad at them, but usually they're pitchers. That's another conversation in itself.
Pitchers can do that. Pitchers just do a lot of things, right?
We can, if we want to go down that rabbit hole, we can, but we might want to stay away.
I feel like since you brought it up, and since you're technically a pitch, I mean you had your stint there, bud.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. You're not talking about them. You're talking about us.
I'm dipping my toe in all of them. Right. So there, I mean, there's an uncommon, like unspoken thing within a team. You got, now it's 26 guys on the team. You usually have 14 pitchers and 12 position players somewhere around there, depending on the team. But for some reason, it's like starting pitchers, there's relievers, there's catchers are on their own program, and then there's position players. So like a lot of times the day revolves around position players making fun of the relievers. That's typically how it goes back and forth, because these guys will come in, say you're in New York for 3 days, and as position players, especially if you're like an everyday guy, which means you're in the lineup all the time, you're preparing every day to go play. And some of these pitchers, they will probably bring their clubs on the road, their golf clubs. Yeah. They're going and playing golf. They're showing up. They got their golf gear on because they basically came right from the and you're like, seriously, dude?
When the Diamondbacks came in, I took like eight of the guys golfing. So I know what you mean.
So there's a tug of war that goes on internally. That's pretty, it's pretty funny, but it's also like really? Like, you
is it a little jealousy or is it?
There's no doubt it's jealousy. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
There's no doubt it's jealousy, but there's at the same time, you're like, how do you guys have the time and the energy to go do this and come back and pitch in the eighth inning and be successful? You're mad. You are. You're right. It mm-hmm. is more jealousy than probably anything else.
Okay. But my question is,
okay,
is it, by the way, when did you get a chance? We can grab the napkins. Mm-hmm. This is, sorry to all the millions watching live around the world. This is how we do it. We just get napkins passed to us. Yeah, thank you. It doesn't matter if it's messy. Thanks. Okay, so on that same line, because I think I know how I would feel, but I want to ask the thought above the players. If that guy's going golfing, okay, and you know, there's definitely going to be a little bit of like we talked about, like, really, dude? If he goes out and pitches well, then you're like, you just mm-hmm. kind of let it, like, you're like, all right, you did it, but you did your job. Yep. But if he goes out and, like, blows it, is it a little like you're really, like, maybe, did you throw those little, like, maybe next time we don't go golfing, like, kind of like under your breath type things, or is it?
I've seen that happen before. Yeah.
So there's got to be a little bit of that. Like, dude, were you focused on, what was your priority? But I will say this, before, as you answer that, well, we can talk about that. I want to talk about the number of games. Go ahead first.
So the it's usually not the starters. So the starters are very, very regimented. If you know any starting pitchers, like, they're
unless you're the Glavin and Maddux and all those guys.
Yeah, that yeah.
It's a different era. They
go all the time. Like, yeah.
But like these guys, the first day after they pitch, they do, you know, yoga and run the stairs to the stadium. The second day, you know what I mean? So like they won't, those guys wouldn't golf like the day before they pitched, right? But the relievers, they'll literally play golf. They would literally play golf every day if they could, if they had right. proximity to it, especially on the road. But there's not, I mean, you know, the, like a clubhouse setting for the, you spend so much time with these guys too, that like they're brothers. So yeah. if somebody were to be stepping out, if a dude went on a 6-day road trip and literally played golf 6 days in a row for some reason, which that wouldn't happen, but like, let's hypothetically say that. And he pitched 3 times and he gave it up like all 3 times. You probably get on the plane, like when you're leaving, and be like,
well, yeah,
like, they'll look maybe, maybe this next road trip we try to only golf like once or twice. Like
we try, even though you.
By we mean you.
Well, that's funny because that's so, yeah, I could see that. But and what I was going to say in going into the my next kind of question, but thought was, because people ask me, because in football, right, you have, well, now 17 games. But literally every game matters.
Yeah.
Like, at some point you can kind of like, you know, you're right now, say like the Eagles, they're 12, 13, 1, whatever it is. Like, they can lose one. They've already clinched, whatever. Sure. But literally every game matters. In every other sport, hockey, baseball, basketball, every game doesn't matter. Now, you all can say every game matters. But at the end of the day, like, if you watch a team lose, they don't take it nearly as hard
as
– and I don't mean this to put anybody on blast, because I'm sure the fans are like – no, they need to care about every game.
You're calling out the whole MLB right now, dog.
NBA, NHL, everything. I mean, the feel is different for all three sports because you know. Now, when it's crunch time, then it's different ballgame.
Absolutely.
But there's so many games, I feel like sometimes players are like, all right, I hate to lose what we lost, but we'll get them tomorrow.
Right.
Where football is like next week, like, golly, we can't. You know what I'm saying? Do you feel that a little bit? Like,
they say there's kind of like an internal saying that you can't really – You can't win the regular season or like, you know, win your division in April and May, but you can lose it, right?
Okay.
Because you go and say there's 60 games between April and May, and you go, you know, 25 and you know, whatever, 35, you might be okay. But like, you really lay an egg, it's hard to come back because once the weather starts to turn and whatnot, it gets tougher when everybody starts to really get into play. But man, that's, you're right. You break it up into series. Like, you look at each week by okay, 3-game series, 2-game series, 4-game series, you try to win the series.
Yeah.
And you know that if you win the majority of the series of the year, by the time September rolls around, you're going to be good.
What you're saying is, like, you can lose a game. If it's a 3-game, you can lose one, but you want to win the next two. So as long as you win the series, that's what's important, you're saying. Okay.
Baseball karma and the baseball gods, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's hard to sweep a team, and it's hard mm-hmm. to get swept in a series, whether it's April, May, or June. Now, the really good teams are the ones that, like, when they're rolling, they're not winning 4 of 5, they're winning 8 of 9 and finding ways to do it. Like the Dodgers this year, their run was just ridiculous.
Right.
Like it seemed like they were winning 3 of 4, 4 of 5, 5 of 6 every single time, every week. But that's just it's so difficult to do for whatever reason, just because, you know, baseball is just such a strange, like it's such a strange sport for the long haul.
Well, I heard through all that, what I heard was, our first betting nugget. If you're betting a series and they're down 0-2,
you win the first two?
You better bet hard on the last because no one's getting swept, but it's hard to get swept in baseball. Thanks for that betting nugget brought to you by Coors Banquet, Neil Walker,
and the football and sports book.
Thank me later.
All right. Hey, Spence, what'd you think of the wings?
Dude, I thought the wings were delicious. I thought that truffle hot, but here's the thing, we spice people. You know, the only way to make spice better is add truffle to it. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
That's really good.
That's very really good.
Yeah.
He's got just a little bit of sweat forming on his brow. Just a teeny.
It's hot. But that's nice. Okay. It's like a good hot dog.
That's what you want. That's the type of wing that reels you in. You're like, yo, that's kind of hot. Yep. Wait a second. I need more.
No one wants hot. Like I love hot. We love hot. Yep. We talk about this all the time. We did the hot ones challenge. We talk about that.
Yep.
I don't want hot that just burns my face and has no flavor.
Right.
Yeah.
Like if it's gonna burn my face, give me good flavor. Like I'll go nuts. If, yes, and that wing is good because it's hot, but it's got great flavor.
Okay, so I'll say this about the heat thing, because we did the hot ones, whatever, and we have a little video that we chopped up. People, what's not in that video is that he, you know, Da Bomb. You ever watch Hot Ones?
Yeah.
Okay, so Da Bomb, it's like the one that he went back to the Da Bomb like 4 times.
Oh, come on.
He's like, yo, I kind of, what is it, Chipotle? I was like, brother, there's no flavor. These are chemicals. This is just chemicals. But he went back 4 times where he was like hanging out, waiting for us to catch up.
There's no way you weren't sweating after that one.
I have no problem.
Well, then he put the Apollo Last Dab joint on a sandwich after he was done. He's like, yo, man, that Apollo one had a good
foot. I got a problem with heat, but
yeah.
But anyway, those wings were good. We're here footballing. We got a ball.
We got a ball.
Let's get a beer.
Oh, it's funny you'd say that, Ben. Mm-hmm. All right, because our guest actually brought us one for the first time in footballing history.
Our guest brought us a beer.
The guest showed up. So typically...
that's why we brought him. That's just a good
guy. Neil, I'm going to assume because you brought beer that you've seen some clips or tidbits of the show. Yep. Typically, this is the time in which I would break down a beer for all of us to try. But because you brought this beer, I'd love for you to explain it to us.
Tell
us
about it. Sure. So this beer is by a company called The Alchemist. And get it on there.
Yep.
And it is out of Stowe, Vermont. And this one is called Heady Topper. So... the people that made this, their name, John Kimmick is his name, and he is running it up in Stowe, Vermont right now. And he went to the same high school that I went to, and he transplanted up
Pine
there.
Richland?
It was Richland at the time when he went there, but Pine Richland High School, this guy went. And this has won a lot of awards. It's tremendous. They have obviously more than this, but it's when you read some of the stuff on the back, it's kind of funny. It tells you, you know, you're supposed to drink it from the can.
Which is unusual. I mean, most of the time, like we had one person tell us that you know, because we argue that we feel like when we drink our Coors Banquet, we drink out on everything on draft, in my opinion, tastes better.
Right.
Like, to me, it goes draft, glass, can in that particular order.
Right.
But people, and then we had some people like, had to be yinz. I mean, true yinzers. Can's the best way to go. Like, okay. But this is truly says, drink out of the can.
And there's
keep it cold, but not ice cold. Which is
they don't want you to put it on ice. He wants you to put it in the cooler. The reason he wants you to drink it from the can is because the layer of CO2 stays in the can after you open it, and so that each taste is basically the exact same. Whereas if you pour it in a glass, the CO2 dissipates and it doesn't smell as good. It obviously tastes just as good, but doesn't smell as good.
Listen to this. For the long haul. The act of pouring in a glass smells nice, but it releases the essential hop aromas that we have worked so hard to retain.
So your buddy John is an actual alchemist, is what you're telling me.
So am I. What is that a guy that drinks beers or makes beers?
No, man, it's alchemy, dog. It's like science.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah, that's what I am. But this, I was almost, I mean, too.
Especially up in that region, though, like in Vermont and Colorado and some of these places, like they take this stuff serious.
Is there like a proper way to like open it?
No, but you're supposed to, he does say, right when you open it, you're supposed to smell it.
Listen, that's what we do anyway. We watch the show. Hey, John, watch the show, brother. That's what we do anyway. Yeah.
All right, so I got the wide.
If he critiques my... Oh, I thought you spilled it everywhere. I thought I was going to say, hey, John.
Here we go. And then you go straight in.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a great track record of...
Oh, I can smell it already.
Smells delicious, John. I can
smell it already, John. Oh, that's... Yep. As an alchemist, that smells... Oh, nice.
Brother, you just say, enjoy it. As an alchemist, that smells...
Woo! That's hoppy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, but I feel like that's very delicious, very John. Good.
It is 8%, John, so I might not finish this,
buddy. Yeah. That's
shout out to the alchemist.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Oh, and the other one. John.
Oh, yeah, the other alchemist. John.
Hey, John, I know we have the other alchemist. If John was here, we have an alchemist handshake.
You guys meet on Fridays, right?
Sometimes. Yeah. Every other Friday. But we don't tell people about it.
Oh, my bad.
People would want to join.
I mean, not Fridays.
So, John.
Not Fridays.
You know. See you Friday.
I'd be curious, though, for real, about the temperature. Like, why? Because when I was in Germany, none of their beer is ice cold. Like, they drink...
It's not lukewarm, though, right?
No, it's a little bit colder than, like, room temp. It's chilled, but it's not cold. And I was told that, like... So, on draft, it's called Vonfass.
Okay.
So, is their draft beer. And I was told it doesn't have any preservatives. And I will say this. The time... I spent 10 days there... Oh, brother.
You
check your alchemy degree, brother. I don't know what was that.
I wasn't ready for the alchemist part of that one.
But I'd be curious with it because I felt like the beer that I had in Germany has not been matched by beer in the U.S. Oh, dude. And I heard that. I'm like, yeah, okay, it's Germany. I got there. I was like, oh, okay.
For Oktoberfest or something like that?
So I was there during Oktoberfest. Wow. I didn't go to Munich. But we were in a couple different cities around East Germany where they had different. But, it was just different, bro. I don't know how to explain it, man. It was just better.
Yeah, I don't quite understand. Maybe the alchemist can.
Alchemist.
I'll talk to you guys about that after the show. I don't want to like let everybody know our secrets.
Your secrets.
Our secrets. But that's good. I like that. I love it. It says if you must pour into a glass, like capital must. If you must pour into the glass,
shame on you. Yeah. But what's cool is they do a lot of like environmental stuff as well, which is awesome. And they have the Alchemist Foundation. Through the Alchemist Foundation and all this. So really, really cool stuff. And like I said, it's not necessarily a local beer, but no, it's a local guy. So that's, you know.
That's just as cool. Thank you to our guest.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you to John.
Certified B Corp. Good for them, man.
Alchemist Vermont. Cool. It's very good.
Yeah, I would like co-sign. How would you rate that, Ben, out of 10? So that, typically that's what we'll do. We'll rate them out of 10. Yep. 10's like the great white whale or buffalo. What is it called? The great white buffalo?
Great buffalo.
We haven't found one yet. We haven't found 10 yet.
Yeah.
Except of course banquet.
I like it. It's definitely got some, you know, it's 8%. You can feel, sometimes you can just feel it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not that it's like thick heavy, but you can tell it's hoppy. It's strong. It's got good flavor. I like it. I would like to drink that like on a cool day, like today, you know, like to me, that's not, I don't want to drink that in the summer personally. I like that on a fall day.
Yes.
As you would say, in a flannel.
Yeah. In a flannel.
Like just I probably wouldn't have more than one, but that's a good one right there. Yeah. I like that. So I'd give it probably a 7.5.
I like solid. That. That's a solid rating.
For us, that's a good rating. That's a pretty solid rating. So thank you.
And that's usually what I do. I'm not surprised that you said that, but that's for some reason come like late September.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, okay, I don't need more than one of these, but it gets you.
I'm not doing it at the pool.
Yes.
In my bathing suit when my belly starts sticking out. I'm not doing that. But no, that's good. And this company has other ones, like other flavor, flavors and stuff.
Nice. Oh, don't worry. We'll have some sent to the house. Okay, don't worry.
That's nice. Very good.
Nice. Speaking of Pine Richland, that's where you went to school.
Yeah.
I had to do a little bit of research because I didn't want to be like totally not knowing my guests. So that's all I know about you.
So high school is pretty cool.
High school is cool, right?
Local guy.
High school is cool.
No, were you from here because like were your parents from here or just because your dad played? Your dad played ball for the Pirates, right?
So his very last year, he was in spring training with the Pirates.
Okay.
And had an injury that essentially, he was done. He was done at that point in his career. He played most of his career in Montreal, a little bit in Detroit. In Anaheim. So that was where the bulk of his career was, mostly 70-ish to to the mid 70s. But Spence and I, before we got on, we were talking about it. He's a Tampa guy. So my mom is from North Hills, like North Hills School District. And my uncle is. And my uncle was a unbelievable player at North Hills High School, a pitcher. And he was a guy that was drafted out of high school. And so he played for the Expos. My dad played for the Expos. That's how my mom and dad met. And so instead of, for some reason, wanting to live in Tampa, especially between the months of November and April,
he wanted to live here.
They wanted to live here.
And so. I've been saying this for 10 years, man. Spence. What are we doing?
Yeah. But no, we've, so I was born and raised in Bellevue, Westview, Bellevue. And then we moved out to Gibsonia when I was maybe 4 or 5.
Okay.
So, and I still live out there now. So yeah, Pine Richland, born and bred, went there. My wife went there. So
the Rams.
The Rams. Yeah. And it was Richland High School before that. It grew, it's growing like crazy, but it grew from the early 2000s to like the, you know, 2010, it grew like crazy.
Really? Did they always have a good baseball? Was baseball like one of the pro? Because their football program is pretty good, right?
So the football program was not great until getting into the 2000s. It was a small school, and then they built this grand stadium over there, and we had some pretty decent athletes in the early 2000s, and then it just took off. And now, you know, as you probably have seen, they won the state championship this year in the second highest classification, which was awesome.
That's cool.
So, but it's, I mean, it's growing like, you know, North Allegheny, Seneca, Butler, some of these areas that are just super, have thousands and thousands of kids in the school.
And so did you, I don't want to turn this into like an interview thing, but I'm very curious. You played baseball there. And did I read catcher? Were you like, was that your main position?
I was drafted as a catcher. Yeah.
So you went from playing, did you go to college?
Or you I didn't go to college. I was supposed to go to Clemson.
Okay.
Yep.
And so you go straight from high school to like the minors or something?
Yes. Yeah.
Who drafted you?
So the Pirates drafted me in 2004.
Was that the dream?
That was really cool. Yeah. So when I was prepping, when we were kind of prepping for the draft and in 2004, same year you were drafted.
It's a pretty good draft class. Who else was drafted?
Malkin.
Huh.
Roethlisberger, Walker.
We tried to get Gino on here, but no, we didn't. But yeah. So anyway, so when the draft came,
yeah, there was like there was one team that drafted before the Pirates that was interested. I think it was maybe the Orioles, and then the Cardinals were right behind the Pirates. And obviously, my hope was that the Pirates would pick me. And I caught at the time. I switch hit. I caught. I played well with Team USA and some of those things leading up to it. So, you know. Number 11 came around, and we were sitting around a computer screen.
Wait. What number of draft pick are you?
11.
No draft pick.
That sound familiar?
What was Gino? Like two?
I think he was one. He was like two or three.
Forget him. We don't like those top guys. We like
top 10.
Right, yeah, we're like just after. Let's get just outside the top 10.
It's a good sweet spot.
Sorry, I didn't know that, but go ahead. Cool.
So, yeah, they were sitting around a computer. I mean, even at that time, they didn't even have. They didn't do the grandiose thing like they do with Major League Baseball now.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty big. I mean, they try to make it similar to football, but it's obviously not the same. And get drafted a week and a half later, sign my contract, and I'm getting ready to go to Bradenton to the rookie league. And I'm like, holy crap, I don't even know how to wash my clothes. Like, I was what do I do? Like, I don't even know how to. I don't know how to do anything. I'm 18 years old. My mom has done everything for me basically my whole life. And you get to...
I love that you get drafted as a professional baseball player and your number one worry in life is, dang, man, I got to do laundry.
That was my worry. I wasn't worried about like, you know, when you go down and there's all these guys and you practice in the morning and then you go to lunch and you play in the afternoon. And we're talking about June, July in Florida. So you can imagine, like,
yes,
as an 18-year-old, it's culture shock. The you know, the Latin guys are a lot of the Latin guys that are there are between the ages of like 16 and 19 don't speak a lick of English. They're teaching them to speak English. Guys like myself are in culture shock because I haven't been used to this. Like, I don't know what to expect when I'm going down here. Yeah. And you're getting on a routine. You're learning all this stuff. You're on like a curfew. And so that was the first year was difficult, more so from a mental standpoint than an on the field standpoint. And then you get a little bit of a groove, but you know, baseball is just, it's such a marathon, not even from a year to year, but like just your career. You think about your career. When I got in the Pirates organization, you have two rookie leagues, one like a high school ish and then a college league, low A, high A, double A, triple A, and then the big leagues. So you're talking about six minor league levels. I hit every single one of them. Jeez, every single one of them all the way up into the major leagues. So it's kind of crazy. And you see, obviously, you see now the Aaron Judge contracts and kind of all this stuff. It's insane. Nuts. Where baseball is right now.
Nuts.
Yeah.
That's wild, man.
Do guys ever get, this is once again my ignorance, do guys ever get, they never go straight from like high school to number one, like to the bigs.
No, I mean, guys like Bryce Harper,
like Jeter didn't spend long in the minors, right?
There's some guys that spent maybe like 3 years and they were like 20, 21 when they got the big leagues, but it's very rare.
Yeah.
And there's some Latin guys that came over at like 15.
Supposedly 15.
Yeah. Andrew Jones and, you know, Juan Soto and some of these guys.
Them papers got lost.
Yeah, the papers typically don't add up. We usually add a couple years.
Nah, man, Costa Rica, you got to carry the one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I wondered that, like, people, they don't just go to the, I mean, they could go to the triple. Could they go to triple, or is that even hard to do? Like from the high school?
I've seen college pitchers, like legit SEC, ACC college pitchers go, and a few Pac-12 and some of these, Arizona State and some of these teams. I've seen guys go straight, not spend a single day in the minor leagues. It is very rare.
But they did college first.
Yes.
Not they did from college. High school.
And you have to spend, you got to get to your junior year after your junior year, unless you go to JUCO, which used to be a really big kind of stopgap for the guys that thought they were good enough. And that in that case, you only have to spend 1 or 2 years in college and then get redrafted.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So you said you were in all six levels of the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Having been through that and
you want me to name them all off for you?
You did, and it was very impressive, brother.
No, but I can.
Yeah, hit me with them.
Here we go.
Yeah.
All right. 2004, I was in Bradenton for the Gulf Coast League. I call it the Gulf Roast League because it's 100 degrees. Okay.
Yes, it is.
I finished that year in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, with the kind of the college level guys. The next year I was in Hickory, North Carolina, just outside Appalachian State. The next year I was in Lynchburg, Virginia. The year after that I was in Altoona, and then I got to Indianapolis. I got to AAA as a 20-year-old actually. And that was awesome. But then I got stuck there for like 3 years because it was AAA is in my opinion, guys will debate AA, AAA or AAA, the big league, like, or high A to AA, AAA. What's the biggest jump in the minor leagues? I thought AAA was very difficult, especially as a young guy, because a lot of the guys have had big league experience and they come back down, they go back up, they come back down. So they know how to pitch. They know how to have a good approach at the plate. So I struggled for a while in AAA, and I had changed positions a couple years earlier. I was playing third base. I was playing some other positions, but that was, it was all great experience because by the time I got to the big leagues, I had gone through a lot of ups, a lot of downs, injuries, you name it. Like, I'd already gone through it. And even though I was already 24, I mean, you were what, 22 when you got drafted?
I think so, 21, 22.
So, you know, the mindset as a 22, 23, 24-year-old is a lot different than, you know, a little bit older or even a little bit younger. I feel like there's a big gap between 19 to 22, 22 to 24. So I had gone through the ringer pretty good. So when I got to the big leagues, I was fortunate enough to have an opportunity with Pittsburgh, but also kind of grasp it and run with it. So, and we were starting to build something with, you know, Kutch and some of these guys that were in the organization already at that point.
When did you like move out of the catching position? Like how did that transition happen?
So I caught for the first 3 years of my professional career. When I got to double A, I caught for a little bit, and then they approached me and they said, hey, we have a couple guys at the major league level that are really good catchers. One's a left-hand hitter, one's a right-hand hitter. We want to stick with these guys for the foreseeable future. We think you can play third or first and hit well enough to stay at those positions. And I said, all right, that's fine. And so I did that for 2 or 3 years. And then a guy, you know, baseball fans listening might be familiar with, Pedro Alvarez, was drafted like 2 overall, and he was strictly a third baseman. And out of Vanderbilt, which is one of the best baseball schools in the country. And I'm sitting in AAA, like toiling around and playing decent, but not great. And this guy gets drafted, and boom, he's already in AA. And I'm like, oh boy, I better start playing a lot better. So all of a sudden, the next year in spring training, I'm playing first base, third base, second base, right field, left field, and even like doing some catching. And I always knew that I could hit, but I just, at that point, I didn't really have a position. So it's a good lesson, and one that I share a lot when I talk to young kids too, is like, listen, you may not end up play. Obviously, work, be the best hitter that you can be, but don't pigeonhole yourself to just be a shortstop. Don't pigeonhole yourself to just be a center fielder. Like, if coach asks you to go left field, don't drag out there. Like, see it as a challenge.
Yeah,
you know,
and
so there were some valuable lessons to that as well. And I feel fortunate that I ended up playing some multiple positions and then falling into the second base spot when I got to the big leagues and stayed. And I was scared, you know what, for the first year, because I didn't play much second base, and they said, hey, we need a second baseman in the big leagues. And I was like, awesome. I can't wait. Got up there and I was like, oh my God, please do not hit the ball to me for an entire year, because
everybody
I didn't
wants
need
the ball. Like, hit the ball to me. It's like, don't hit the ball to me. Don't hit the ball to
me. Late in the game, we'd have a one run lead and I'd be like, please, whatever you do.
Chalk it up to teamwork, dog. We did good. That's hilarious, man. But I'm just so curious about that, because I actually have a two part question. One's a baseball question, one's a life question, because I feel like, as Ben pointed out earlier, no other sport, at least I don't know how soccer does it, you know, overseas, but no other sport has that kind of trajectory. And a lot of times it's because it's going through college and stuff like that.
Sure.
Having been through all of those different leagues and experienced them in over the time span that you have, do you feel like that's the most effective way to vet a player going into the leagues? And if not, how would you make that process better?
That's actually a really good question. I mean, I thought, and now the Major League Baseball draft used to be 40 rounds. It's now down to 20 rounds. 40 rounds. Yeah, think about that. So now it's down to 20 rounds. They've kind of.
If you're in the 40th round, are you thinking I need to go find another job? What else am I going to do? Like,
you're behind the eight ball from the jump.
How many 40 round guys are like stars? Have there been? I would love to find that out.
That's a great question.
Who's the best? You know, everyone talks like Brady was the best.
I think Mike Piazza was like a 39th round draft.
Really?
Yeah.
He's not too bad.
There's a couple guys that you'd be like, really? Like 35th round, 38th round?
But I know. Yeah, sorry. I mean, I just started thinking like that's a lot of people.
Yeah. But I do think that, and it kind of bodes the question, like, you know, you think about, you know, quarterbacks that get into, get drafted, but you know, they don't get opportunities for several years, 4 or 5 years, or even at all. It's like, you wonder if football could ever have some sort of, you know, non-contact league or something.
Minor league.
Flag football, because it is valuable.
I think that's what they're thinking, like the XFL or the, like some of these things, like, is that going to be their like entry USFL, you know, whatever going on. But I hear you. Like, but don't you think though it would get frustrating? Like, if you just spent, like, at what point after 5 years in the minors or 6 years, like, at what point, when is your breaking point of like, all right, enough's like, kind of enough's enough? Like, you obviously, like you said, you spent however many years there, like, you didn't give up, you had a great major league career, but you could have given up because it's like, man, this has been 5 years now, it's time to give up, or do you have to be like, is it more like 10-11 because it's so hard? Like, there's got to be at some point a breaking point.
And there is, and I've seen guys that have gone and played 1 year of pro ball and like, out of high school, I'm going back to college. Like, I'm gonna go try to walk on the football team or walk on the basketball team or do something. And I've seen guys that have been like 25 years old in high A, and you're like, what are you doing? And you've also seen 31, 32 year olds in AAA that you know are making enough money by you know some standards to get by. Because if you play for a certain amount of time in the minor leagues, you make a little bit more than at least what they're making now. Exactly. But it's not easy. Like, the minor leagues is just not great, but it is very valuable. And the winter leagues, they do winter leagues. I played winter league in Mexico, Venezuela. They do winter league in Puerto Rico, Dominican. Jeez. And these are like what I consider 4A leagues. So there's guys go down there to get ready for the season. So there's stars that are playing down there in these leagues.
Yeah.
So there's some value to the minor leagues, to the winter balls, to some of these. It's just a matter of how you kind of look at it. It's a totally polarizing conversation on the baseball front.
Yeah, and you mentioned coming from you know, suburbs of Pittsburgh, going down to Bradenton, having culture shock. And in your first, what, 6 years in the league, you go through and you're moving to a different city. What's the one thing you look for when you get to a new city to kind of ground you in that space?
A good place to eat.
Brother, brother, preach it.
Yeah, because you got to think. So the baseball schedule is like, everything's late. You know what I mean? Everything is from you're not waking up in the morning until like 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning for the most part. And your day's not done until 11 o'clock at night.
This sounds like a sport I can get behind. This is a great,
this is right.
Why didn't they tell me this in Little League?
And think about playing a baseball game and the game ends, or a sport and it ends at 10:30 at night. And you're like, all right, I got to wind down from this, right? Like that's every single night because you're wound up, you're going and you got to figure it out. And so everything is very much later. So you have to just roll with the punches as far as that's concerned, but it's not, I'm a morning person. So like even when I played, it was funny because April and May, I always explain to people like April and May, I was up at like 9 a.m. during the baseball season. June and July, I was up at like 10. August and September, I was up at like 11:30. And my wife would be like, are you kidding me? Like, you're up at 11:30 and you're leaving for the field at 1:30. And that was basically your day. And so, you know, that's.
That was a good day. I'm going to start saying that to my wife. Like, hey, man, what you still in bed? Listen, I'm training for the league. You don't understand.
I'm trying to make the majors.
I'm trying to make the majors. Yeah. I'm trying to talk to Neil. I think I got what it takes. I'm going to pass out this beer. So typically, Neil, what we'll do is we'll sample some beers throughout it.
We got wonderful.
We have an all Christmas episode outside of the one that you brought and blessed us with. So I'll pass this down.
I should dress up more for... Don't drink it. Drink it yet?
No, I didn't. I just smelled it.
Yeah.
He jumped the gun. Like
Yeah, he almost Merrill'd it.
We had Merrill on here.
Merrill's a verb now.
So we like to smell it, you know, sip it. Merrill's like, oh, yeah, that was good.
There you go. That's good.
That was good.
I love
it. You didn't taste any. What did you smell? Nothing.
I love Merrill's episode, man.
Are you going to give us the breakdown?
I'm going to give you the breakdown. So this is from, I don't know if it's a nutmeg cinnamon, a local brewery, but there is. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Pottstown, Sly Fox Brewing Company. Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah. My man already knew it. So they have a brewery in Southside.
No, I never had this one.
Yeah. So they have a brewery in Southside that's right underneath the Highline. Very good. Super rad spot. They got good food too. This is called the Jolly Holiday Ale. All right, it's an ale with ginger, cinnamon, allspice, nutmeg, and clove. Oh,
I smell the cinnamon and nutmeg.
I smell the clove.
It's 6.3%.
Okay.
All right, so it's definitely drinkable if you're at the holiday party. It
smells pretty good.
It smells really good.
Pace yourself. Know your limits, Master Wayne. But let's see what you guys...
All right, go ahead.
Cheers.
Yeah. Okay.
That's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, Ben?
It's Christmas in a glass.
Oh, wow. See, he got the technique over here.
I'm an alchemist. Oh, that's so good. Is it like a gingerbread house?
Yeah, it is.
That's it's like a gingerbread like cookie.
I mean, totally agree.
And so someone's gonna comment, Ben's so fat, he thinks it's gingerbread cookies. I don't even like gingerbread cookies. Well, yeah, I do.
Listen, that's good. This can is decorated as an ugly sweater.
Like a can.
Yes. So if you guys wanna, you know, level up. A gingerbread cookie, huh?
I think it's
really good.
It definitely smells like a gingerbread cookie.
It does.
Oh, yeah, that's dangerous.
Yeah, that's good.
That's because you'll get one of the, you'd be drinking that all night.
I love the can, though.
Yeah, Sly Fox.
Yeah.
You've done it again.
It's almost one of those guys, like, you could drink it warm.
You should try it.
You probably can't. Yeah, you probably could. But, like, it just adds, like a warming in front of the fire, calming. Yeah.
So there's a wine.
Calm.
It's probably like $11. It's like what it's called, Witch's Brew, and they instruct you to heat it up.
Oh, come on.
Really?
Yeah. It's not good. Okay? It's not good hot. But
they tell you to do it.
They do it. Well, because it's like a fall time kind of. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
This is good.
This is very good.
It's very different than what this is.
Yes, it's extremely different than what that is.
Very different than that guy.
But this is very delicious. All right, Neil, how would you rate this out of 10?
Are we going to put this in a Christmas beer category too?
Yes, as a Christmas beer. As a Christmas beer.
Okay.
Do whatever you want.
I'm sending this at an 8.5 on the Christmas scale.
Wow.
Yeah, he was pretty close. I was going to say 8.
Were you?
Yeah, it's pretty good. On a Christmas beer, like just as a normal beer, like I'm probably not going to, like, I mean,
Yeah,
it is.
I would totally drink this at this time of year for sure. 100%. And I've never seen this one before. This is fantastic.
Okay, so
I think that's very good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get a banquet to wash the hoppy IPA out of my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's you, it's you alchemists over here making all kinds of like.
Stirring it up.
Yeah. Us alchemists.
Stirring it up.
So, yeah, no. Anything else you want to add? Yeah, sure. So, Neil, I spent the majority of my 20s living in a bus. Traveling the country.
Down by the river.
So I'm always interested when people have similar experiences where they're traveling over, but they're not traveling like vacationing.
I didn't have to do that.
Yeah. So was there a city that you've experienced? Because not only through the minors are you traveling through the country, yeah. you also have a very long career going through different teams.
Yeah.
Was there a city that was easiest for you to kind of assimilate into?
Yeah,
outside of Pittsburgh, obviously.
I think Altoona was probably that. So I was in Altoona in AA. So I was, you know, whatever that is, an hour and a half away from home. So that felt most like home. But you know, the day to day grind, you don't even, especially in baseball where you're playing basically six days out of 7 days of the week, like you're just looking for a quiet bed, yeah, with a comforter to sleep in for however many hours you're going to sleep that night. So it doesn't really like, it doesn't get in your brain, but that was nice because say I got an off day and, I just wanted to get away from baseball, whether it be go play golf or something else. When I was in Altoona, I was able to like shoot home and just be like, all right, I'm just going to just chill here for a little bit, get my laundry done. Hey mom, can you do my laundry? Yeah, thanks. Okay. Can you make me a home cooked meal at the same time and send me some home for the next four days?
Mom's a real one. Mom's, yes, holding it down. Of, yes,
course. So that was probably, in Indianapolis was amazing. I mean, amazing, yeah, as a AAA place. It was more of a major league place than a AAA place, but it was amazing from that standpoint. So, I was very fortunate at the place that I stayed, and I was always on the East Coast, which was nice for, you know, family coming or friends coming or things like that. Every team that I played for outside of Milwaukee for a short stint was all on the East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah. Altoona, oh, curve, man. Yeah.
I had a fan question from Big Ticket 54321. He says, true or false.
He does like the countdown. That's true.
54321.
True or false. You are one of two Major League Baseball players to live at home.
This is true. So here's how it worked. So when I got to the big leagues in 2009, it was September. So I got a September call up. Okay. At the time, I wasn't married. I had a girlfriend who is my wife now, and I got up in September, and I was like, well, I'm not going to rent a place. I'll deal with that in the off season. And so I guess I'm going to stay at mom and dad's. And so I did.
He's in the majors.
Yeah, mom and dad's major leagues. And so it was amazing. It was great. I mean, I would come down in the morning, my dad would be like, oh, what, you know, how'd the game go last night? What'd you see from this guy? And I'm like, dad, just leave me alone. I want some eggs. And so fast forward the next year, I didn't make the team in spring training. And got called up in May, mid-May, which ended up being for the rest of the year. That was 2010. And it was the same thought. I was like, what if I get sent down? I don't want to rent an apartment for 6 months. You know what? Screw it. I'll stay. So I'm 20. I'm 20.
I love this.
I'm 24. I'm 24. I'm not married. I have a serious girlfriend at the time who is now my wife. And I'm saving rent, and you know, but you know what, the baseball karma gods got me back, because the 3 years that I spent in New York, they got it all back. So any money that I saved in Pittsburgh, staying at home for that 1 year plus, it was gone.
You get did to your the city mom of New York? Kick you out?
She didn't kick me out, but it was like, okay,
you need to go.
I mean, it's
she said, you're a Met now. Bye.
Yeah, you gotta go.
That is so.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Do you? Okay. The next question. This one's from Dowling 54321. Could you have played? You were a two or three sports star in high school.
I played three sports. I was not very good at basketball. I was a pretty decent football player. But it wasn't going to translate at the next level.
So that was the question. Could you have played college football?
So here's my concern. Okay. In high school, especially before my back issues, I could actually move. I could move pretty well. So I was same height, but I was, probably 195 pounds. I moved really well. I played wide receiver and safety and free safety. But I knew that if I went and played, D1, small D1, mid D1, whatever it may be, they were going to be like, you know what? We're going to move you down to outside linebacker and we need you to put 50 pounds on you. And I was like, I'm not doing it. Okay. I wasn't fast enough to play wide receiver. I wasn't fast enough to play safety, free safety, strong safety. I knew they were going to move me down in the box. So anybody that talked to me about football, they didn't say it, but I knew that it was something that they were like, we got to put 40 pounds on you. We got to move you down in the box. And I was like, that's not going to be good for the baseball career. So when push came to shove, when I actually signed to go to Clemson, it was one of the only Bobby Bowden's son was there at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the only guys that I hadn't talked to. And it was the best baseball program that I was in contact with at the time that was pretty close to Western Pennsylvania. So that's kind of how I landed on Clemson.
So I don't think you could have played in the majors. I don't think you could play.
Do you
in
think
NFL.
You could have played?
But I mean,
in
at the same
MLB?
Time, like if I had to rate myself as a football player, I'd probably say like if you mixed like Julian Edelman and Ed Reed into one player, that was probably me. So
listen. To be honest, I'm probably like a combination of like it's kind of when I sing, I'm like Fergie and Jesus.
Fergie and Jesus.
He's like Jerry Rice and Ed Reed.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you gonna say? Two Hall of Fame. I mean,
yeah. Geez. I don't know if you've heard of these guys, but I'm kind of like,
I'm just putting some names out there.
That
I'm
kind of that was a light comparison. I mean, yeah. I toned it down.
Do you think that you could have played in, well, because your sport, other sport is probably basketball, right?
Basketball is my other sport.
And
I could have played in the majors.
Do you think you could have actually?
I might have been one of the guys who went right to the top.
I might do it next week. I might go back.
I might have went right to the top. Like, not spent a lot, like you talked about, there's not many to spend time down low.
You're one of those.
I don't want so much time. I would have went down just to see the guy, say hey,
brother.
I'm right back up,
brother. I would have been on Last Chance You. That's what I would have been.
Listen, people can say what they want about like I was a good athlete. I was this. I was that. No, you couldn't have done it.
He said
you
no.
Couldn't have done it.
You're right.
To be honest, you can't. I don't care. You just like He's talking about Aaron Judge. Yeah. Or there was this debate for a long time about LeBron James playing football. Mm-hmm. Listen, freak athlete, huge guy. I always said that, put him down there for a jump ball on the 2-yard line. Yeah. He's probably going to catch every time.
Yeah.
But I bet you he doesn't want to go across the middle when Ed Reed or Troy Polamalu. Yeah, he's a lot bigger, but those guys are moving so hard, it's not going to be fun. Now, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, but it doesn't mean that it's going to translate to another sport.
Yeah, right.
And I just use him because I know that everyone talked about him playing or whatever. And, there's some guys that are, you talk about Cruz. I mean, he's a big, fast dude. Could probably play. You'd say, okay, play receiver. For a while, wasn't Usain Bolt talking about trying to play? Ocho Cinco tried to go play soccer. I mean, it doesn't translate.
Right.
It just, you're very good at what you do. Yeah. It's the same thing. Okay, how about this? Tony, and something completely different, Tony Romo wanted to go play golf.
Yeah.
Tony Romo is an extremely good golfer. I have talked to people that I know very well that have played in same tournaments that are professional golfers that are like 100 to 150 in the world. We're not talking top 50, 100 to 150 in the world.
Sure.
That have played in tournaments with him that are like, dude, I beat the brakes off him. Like, he can't even like make a cut. But this dude can go out and beat 99% of the population that's not a professional golfer.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
he's going to beat most people, and he's a very good golfer. He's a +4 or +5.
Yeah.
But it's a different ball game.
Yeah.
It just doesn't translate.
Yeah.
And so you just have to understand that to play those sports, we can joke about it. Like, yeah, you could have played basketball. You could have played this, that.
But I could have done both, guys.
No, totally. No problem.
Listen, if I don't have to prove it, then I totally could have.
Bo Jackson and Dion.
That begs an interesting question then, because you do have these two sport athletes, right? In your guys' opinion, because you have a lot of people who jump from football to baseball, what do you think, or who do you think, is the best two sport athlete that we've had?
Ever?
Ever.
See, I would say... It's hard because there's some old guys. You talk about like guys like Jim Thorpe. I mean, you can go way back. You can go way back and pick some people. But that I ever saw, to me, it was always hard to argue with Bo Jackson. I think he was just one of the greatest athletes of all time.
Yeah,
like I agree. You know, Bo was just a freak.
Freak.
I mean, and Deion was good. I mean, Deion was an extremely good football player. He was good at baseball, I think. Yeah. Was he great? I don't know if he was great.
I don't think he was considered great, but he was
very good.
Good. Yeah.
But like Bo Jackson was like really stupid good at both.
I think
so. I would go Bo, but that's just my opinion, right? Of people I saw.
Yeah, I think my favorite two-sport athlete was Michael Jordan in Space Jam. I thought his baseball performance was great. And when he defeated the Monstars, I thought not only did we need that in sports, but we actually needed that for humanity. You understand? Right. Did you guys see
this? This is good perspective.
Did you guys see the second Space Jam?
No.
Of course not. No one did. Next question.
No, not Mike. Moving on. Well, that's what I wonder, too. Like, when he made that transition to baseball,
yeah.
I wonder, like, if you were on that team and he comes on there, are you like excited about it? Or are you more like, dude, you're taking someone's spot?
I would venture to say that guys probably saw it that way.
That's like, what I, like it's probably cool for a while, but then you're probably sure. Like, dude, like you can't go.
I still can't conceptualize how it like from a logistics standpoint worked. So did he not go to camp in August? Did he not go to football camp in August? And played until like I'm not totally up to speed with it, but yeah. At the same time, like spring training, and I'm sure you would say the same thing. There's a lot of value to spring training for baseball, and I'm sure there's a ton of value to camp in football, at least from an X's and O's and standpoint. Unless of course you're a 6, 7, 8, 9 year vet.
Yeah,
but. I can't even imagine from a physical standpoint what those guys went through.
Yeah,
to do bouncing back and forth.
That'd be tough. I don't know, but
yeah,
That's crazy to think of. I do want to as we get going to this next beer.
No, we're good.
I've heard, because I want to hear a little bit more. Like your dad obviously playing. Did you ever feel like not pressure, but was that like what you were gonna like? Because he was doing it. He played for a little while. Did you feel like that's what you wanted to do because you wanted to be like him? Anything like that? Was there any of that involved at an early age or not really?
For sure. I mean, I was – so –
he pitched, you said.
He pitched.
Okay.
He didn't bless me with any type of golden right arm. I think the hardest I ever touched was like 82 miles an hour. So, okay. So I always like to joke.
Your ERA is better than his.
That's the first thing that I did when I get out of that inning. I called my dad after. I said – this ain't hard, bro. Like, what do you mean? He had like a 3.8 in the big leagues, which is pretty darn impressive. But I was like, this ain't hard. Like, I threw four balls down the middle. These guys just popped it straight up.
Oh yeah, one job, Dad. You only had one job.
It's one job. Like, so, but no, I I'm the youngest of four. So my sister's 4 years older than me. Six, and my brother's 6 and 8. So like, I was always the tag along guy, the kid. You know, when they were playing. I was tagging along. I was annoying the crap out of everybody at the baseball fields, basketball gym, whatever it may be. But I always knew that I wanted to do that from a very young age. And, you get to high school and I'm sure you can lament with this. Just you miss a lot of moments that normal kids get to go through. I miss so many, parties and dances and things like that because I was in Columbus, Ohio, or Tennessee, Knoxville, Tennessee, or Florida. Because in this region, especially at that time, you had to go other places for baseball. You know, football was a little bit different. It was a little bit easier, in my opinion, and you could probably speak to that. It's probably a little easier to get seen. Baseball, like, I was traveling all over the place just to try to get in front of ACC coaches, SEC coaches, scouts, all this stuff. And that's what my sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school looked like. And so, and to not change course, what I'm doing, one of the things I'm doing now is kind of part of this thing. I'm started a business called East Coast Exposure, which is out of this area, but we're hoping to expand. And that's what I'm hoping to give back to baseball is these kids that are sophomores, juniors, seniors in high school in this region. We have the technology, we have the fields, we have the connections to some of these college coaches. They don't have to be D1, D2, D3, junior college, whatever it may be. I want to try to give these kids, if you want to go play in college and you want to be in a showcase or a tournament that we're running, we're going to take your metrics, your pitching metrics, your hitting metrics, how hard you hit, all this stuff, And if we deem you as a D1, D2, D3 player, we're going to send it out to all these colleges. Oh, wow. Because
so you help with the recruiting for the kids.
Exactly. Wow, yeah. That's kind of what is on top of doing some more of the broadcast stuff with the Pirates, which I love because it keeps me involved, but not to a large capacity because I got a 6 and 3 year old at home. That scratches my baseball itch. And so, and to grow up around here and to know how difficult it was to get seen on the baseball scene and to know what my parents went through, driving me to these places, spending all sorts of money. And it all worked out for me, but it didn't necessarily work out for other people. We're hoping to give people the opportunity in this region, Ohio, New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, to come here or come to something similar and get your metrics. We'll send it out to colleges. Somebody sees what they like. Maybe we can take a D3 kid and make him a D2 kid, maybe D2 to D1. That's cool. Kind of a passion project that I'm involved in that I'm super proud about.
How do people how do they find out about that? How does a kid, say I'm a sophomore or I'm a freshman. I love baseball. How do I get into the program what does that look like?
Yeah. So we're going to run tournaments, what we consider showcase tournaments, and then we're going to run showcases. So my group took over the WPIAL showcase, which you may be familiar with the WPIAL. It's Western Pennsylvania Interscholastic League. So every kid that most likely has an opportunity to play at the next level in the summer, they'll come to this program. Okay. There will be 50, 70 college coaches from the region on top of probably 200-plus kids at this showcase. So that's one. And then what we do from that, we put them a player profile together. So kid comes, he hits 10 balls off a machine and hits, the ball 95 to 100 miles an hour. All that data goes into his player profile where they have his grades from school, his height, weight, how hard he threw across the infield or from the outfield. And we're essentially trying to cut out the middleman from the college coaches, because through COVID, a lot of these college coaches from Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, they're like, we don't have the budget to come up to these places to see kids. So help us out. And so that's kind of where this thing started. So it's not
made for the kid that is already is a big time. This is more for the kid that's going to get lost in the shuffle or doesn't know how to get it out. You're giving someone an opportunity that maybe wouldn't normally have.
Exactly.
There was a kid
from North Allegheny that got drafted last year, 15th overall. And just to give you an idea of what the landscape around here looks like from a get seen perspective, I thought it would be different than when I was in high school, 02, 03, 04. He was playing, he didn't play in any leagues around here. He had to go to Florida. So when school was done in June, July, and August, he went to Florida and played for a team in Miami because that gave him the best chance to get seen for his skill set. Not everybody's skill set's the same. I played with plenty of guys that went to JUCO or went to D3 and ended up being good major league players. So that's the thought process is you may not hit your growth spurt until you're a senior in high school or freshman or sophomore in college, but we still want to provide you with the best chance to succeed at the next level and move forward. So,
I love that, bro.
That's awesome. You're doing love that.
Yo,
that's
Tampa, really cool. You, where you grew up, you didn't have a problem there. Everybody got seen.
I had a problem.
That's really cool that you're doing that, man.
Good issue is I wasn't good. That's the problem. That was the issue I had.
Spence, give us number two here.
Number two.
Because then after we do this, I want to, I heard a really cool. Oh, no, we have new glasses for you.
Okay.
We don't need to read. No. This is a high-class.
High-class establishment.
This is sponsorship.
This ain't
we're
AA.
We're worldwide. This is the majors here.
Love it.
I'll pass these down. This,
I want to get into, I've heard, I want to hear it from you, if you're okay with it.
Yep.
A really kind of cool, unique story about your dad.
Sure.
And the greatest pirate of all time, maybe.
Berto Clemente.
Yes. So I'd love to hear about that as we get going, but I want to hear from this from you first, Spence.
Definitely. And two, going up in Pittsburgh, I'm going to make the fair assumption that you are a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And so
you'd be correct.
I don't know if you know, he's a Steeler. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Once a Steeler, always a Steeler, bro.
Very true there.
All right. And so I'd love to jump into the game too, because we walked away with a W this week. I think that's beautiful. But before we do that, let's jump into the holiday spirit a little bit. This is from New Belgium. New Belgium Brewery. That is the brewery that we're working with here. They're out of Fort Collins, Colorado and Asheville, North Carolina. All right. This is called
what does that smell? What?
Yeah.
What do you guys
That's got? More like apple cider-ish than the last one, right?
Oh, it's very interesting. Like word that
Bicoastal.
Oh, bicoastal.
Bicoastal. Hey, well, because you got a spot in Colorado, right?
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah.
You
know. Colorado. Yeah. Love Colorado.
You a skier?
Yeah. Love skiing.
Big ski guy. Big ski guy. All right. So this is the Holiday Ale. It's a limited release, obviously. And it has flavors of cranberry and spice and everything nice with a ale with cranberry, cinnamon, and other natural flavors. Which in a food product can cover a myriad of different things. It is 7.5%. So stronger. It's one you want to take a little slow.
Okay.
All right, but let's see what you guys got. Neil, you as the guest can go first.
No air. He didn't let air in.
He didn't let air in.
No air got in there.
There you go.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Okay. Definitely different from the last one.
Oh, definitely different. So it's not a gingerbread cookie?
No, it's not a gingerbread cookie. Okay.
All right, Ben. Good technique.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah. There's a finisher on there's some sort of a finish on it. I can't tell what it is yet.
Maybe dive back in and see if you can allow it to develop.
The alchemist in me right now is still figuring it out.
Use some alchemy.
It's been a long day. Wow. You were on the beach this morning.
Yeah. 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 It's
there is something
palm tree? Is it palm coconut? What is that?
Salty sea.
You got some sand in your beard. Yeah.
The suntan lotion? What is that?
It's a little salt on the beard. Okay.
So what do you, first impression, what are you guys feeling?
It's good. I don't like it as much as the other one.
Okay.
I would agree with
that. But it's still good.
Yeah, it is good.
It doesn't taste, you said 7.5 or 8.5?
7.5.
It doesn't taste like that.
It tastes way lighter than that.
Yeah.
That's a dangerous one, New Belgium. What are you trying to do here?
Did you try yes once?
Not yet.
It's got a very unique, like the finishing taste is something I can't put my alchemist.
I totally agree. I can't figure it out either. I tasted like apple cider-ish type.
So it is a cranberry ale.
Cranberry, yeah.
So you might have the tartness from a cranberry.
Maybe I'm not a big cranberry guy, but not the, just, I don't know.
You don't like the cranberries? And let it like linger? we're not going to be able to clear that song.
It's like Heads Up. We're playing Heads Up there with the kids. We're humming stuff. Humming. That was so great. We're doing Christmas.
Tune in this week to hear Ben sing the cranberries.
Really I actually have it. You know, you can on the Heads Up, like they can actually like film the other people.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you crushing it?
Oh, we did it. No,
are you good at that game?
What game am I not good at?
You know, like catchphrase, right? People think they're good at catchphrase, but it's a communication game. I used to use it to build communication with leaders, and people are like, I'm good at catchphrase, and I'm like, brother, I'm gonna break it to you. You're not good at this game. Like you're not good at catchphrase.
I thought I was a good hummer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Yeah, I thought I brought it all over. I was up and down with it. Well,
brother Fergie and Jesus, you know what I'm saying? this is very light.
But isn't it? Right. Isn't it? What's the mouth finish? I can't tell what it is.
Help us out, Spence.
I got you. It's it tastes like a sugar cookie on the back end.
Okay.
Nailed it.
The cranberry is throwing me off. I think is what it is.
Do you have to let it land?
Ben, if you had a cover band and you only played hits from the 80s, what would the name of your cover band be?
Yeah. Can I tell you this? I would use this one.
And who and what teammates would be in it?
Hold on. I would use this one, but it's already a band.
Okay.
And they're one of the best 80s cover bands called Flashback Heart Attack.
That is a super rad name, dude.
They were really good.
That's such a good band
name. Your kiss is on my... That one...
But if you had to do, you get five spots. You get two guitar players, a bass player, a drummer, a singer. You're the singer. Because didn't you in GarageBand, or you were the singer, right?
I slept the bass.
What would the name of your, and you can only use teammates, former teammates, to fill out the band?
Well, I will say, Andrew McCutcheon actually performed at my wedding.
No.
Sang? What did he sing?
Come on, Kutch, come on the show.
I don't know. I don't remember exactly what he sang, but he got the party
Barry White
hyped.
Yeah. Can you put a good word into Kutch to get on the show?
I'm sure he would love to.
Come on, Kutch.
Yeah. His jersey's right back there.
Kutch. Sure that was supposed to come down and put a Walker jersey.
Oh, out. And we're hoping.
We'll fix it in post.
We still got fingers crossed that Kutch will somehow come back to the Buccos one of his last couple years.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Dude, that'd be awesome. So dope.
Yeah. He would like that too.
Yeah,
I went to the Yankee game with him that game. So I got to
spend time
with him. So he's such a good dude.
Awesome dude.
Great guy.
Is he, because I've never met him, is he as as dope as people say he is.
I've been around a few times. He's so talented.
Not even on the field stuff. He's artistic. He sings. I mean,
which I can.
You don't remember what he's saying?
We get him on the show.
You got to sing now.
Oh, we are going to get. We're gonna have just like this.
Just set it up. Yeah, set it up.
Like a, I'm gonna be like this. Yeah.
Well, what is?
Like karaoke machine, like dude. We need to have a karaoke machine or something.
Dude, if he comes on the show and we don't do karaoke, we lost. We lost.
Well, I think what we need to do is like, Kikuchi, I'm sure you've never watched a show, but what we do is we always have our guests sing.
Oh, jeez.
and then if he does it,
I think it's, is my phone ringing?
Yeah. Well, no, we're gonna do it just for Kutch. Just for Kutch.
Okay.
Because then, if he does it,
that dead straight,
dead serious. Yeah. And then if he does it. Yeah. And then he goes back and watches. He's like, "No, no, sing." He said, "Let me sing." I'm like, "Oh, well, something we want to try."
Hey, man, yeah, we just listen. We're developing week by week.
That is so interesting about him.
He sings.
That's awesome.
Super talented.
I know him as a super soft spoken, genuine, good Christian man.
Yes.
So I hope we can get him on here. We wanted to go with you first, Neil, if that's okay.
Don't worry.
That's okay.
He'll be on.
But we got to get Kutch on here. That would be awesome.
Yes. Even more so now, because I feel like we have to, because I don't want to put him on, hey man, we're just saying, sing something. I don't want to be that guy, but I kind of want to be that guy.
For sure.
You know, he sang at your wedding?
Yes.
You don't remember what he sang?
Did you ask him to do it, or he just do it like, because he was like, everyone was in a great mood.
I got married in Shadyside at this place and he was just like, give me the mic.
I was waiting for
Neil to be like, you know, the drinks were flowing. he gave me
the Disney version of that. He was in a great mood.
Dry wedding.
We know what that means.
We danced like this. It was like that. I'm sorry.
That's so awesome. That is so great. But
I will say, Spence, though. Okay, so I grew up biggest Steeler fan that you can imagine. I was at both of your Super Bowl victories. Okay, I still hold myself accountable for not being at the Green Bay Super Bowl. A buddy of mine got married.
Your fault.
I was supposed to go. Buddy of mine got married on Saturday night.
Who cares about your friends?
Yeah.
And so I ended up not going, and a couple of my buddies never let me live it down. They said it's your fault. I went to Detroit. I went to Tampa Bay.
Neil, it was unbelievable. This whole night's been such a pleasure, man.
This is one of those unaired.
Yeah. Well, he's telling stories. I'm like, man, what a good guy. I'm like, Ben, you have such great friends. Insightful, charismatic, and to find out it's your fault.
I was going to give you this football and koozie too to take home with you. Now I'm going to keep it.
Well, at least we, after all these years, we know who to blame.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
So as a Steeler fan, diehard Steeler fan.
Wait, no.
Okay, I don't want to move on too fast, but I want to
hear this one story first, because then we can go to football.
Yes.
Because I've heard it's an amazing story, and I don't know it really well. But I heard that there's a story with your dad and Roberto Clemente.
Yeah, so my dad was playing in Puerto Rico during the time in, I guess it was 70 going to 71, 71 going to 72. One of those. I apologize for the exact dates. Okay. So my dad was playing in Winter League, which I mentioned to you earlier. You know, players, especially back then in the 70s, 80s, you would go play in winter ball. These guys would go make extra money, but also try to get more experience. And my dad was down there playing in Puerto Rico. And he wasn't playing on the same team as Clemente, but obviously Puerto Rico's small. So they had a break from Christmas to New Year's.
Did he say he was a stud? Superstar.
Yeah. Everything from on the field, off the field, like
that's so cool.
Humanitarian.
Yes.
Everything. Everybody wanted to be him. Everybody wanted to be like him.
How long did he play in the, like, this is my true, like, ignorance. I don't even know how long, like, was Roberto, when all this happened, was he young in the league, old in the league? Like, was he?
Well, you know that the very last game he played in, he got his 3,000th hit, which is a huge deal in Major League Baseball. So that was right before he passed away. But fast forward, Clemente, I believe at the time, was a player coach in Puerto Rico for another team.
Okay.
They had a break between Christmas and New Year's. Nicaragua had a terrible earthquake in, like I said, 71 going to 72, I believe is what the year was. And so nobody was playing. Some of these guys were down there and they said, hey, we're going to load up this plane at the San Juan Airport. We're going to put a whole bunch of supplies, waters, all this stuff, take him to Nicaragua for one day and come back. And Clemente was headlining it with a pilot. And initially he was like, whoever wants to go can go. Mm-hmm. They load this plane up. They realize the plane is way more full than they thought it would be. It didn't really trigger any sort of like, maybe we shouldn't take so much. Maybe we should make two trips, anything like that. But what ended up happening, they load up the plane. Clemente is there at the airport. My dad is at the airport. Manny Sanguin, some of these guys that are Pittsburgh legends are there at the airport. And they're going, well, we want to go. It's Christmas Eve or it's New Year's Eve. We really got nothing else to do. Like, let's go. Let's play cards in the plane. Let's have fun. We're going. It's a couple hour flight. We're going to come back the basically drop this stuff off, come back. And Clemente's going, don't go. No, it's going to be me. It's going to be the pilot. That's it. None of you guys can go. What do you mean? Like, we just want to go. We'll sit on boxes. We'll sit in the back. We'll do whatever. Nope, you guys can't go. Plane goes up, plane goes down right off the coast of Puerto Rico. Wow. And the way my dad tells it, there was, I mean, literally people standing on the steps of this airplane, like, it's Roberto, it's fine. Like, we'll just sit on boxes. It's not a big deal. Wow. The other plane's full. And, you know, the way he tells it, my dad said he got off. Clemente said, guys, go home, enjoy New Year's Eve, go party in San Juan, awesome time. And obviously, he said it was just too crowded on the plane. He didn't want these guys to sit on boxes. And by the time my dad had gone from the San Juan airport back to his apartment, and I've heard other people tell the story, similar thing. People didn't really have TVs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may have had TVs, but radio transistors and radios. My dad said he got back to his hotel and people were like, you know, kind of stirring up. And they said, they heard on the radio, plane went down off of San Juan and there wasn't many planes going out of San Juan. And one of the only couple that were going off was a plane that Clemente was on. Yeah. And so by the time, whatever it may be, call it, I don't know what time of day it was, but a couple hours after that, everybody knew. Wow. And if anybody that's familiar with Puerto Rico, at least the surrounding area, like there's a shelf. So you get whatever, 100 yards, 200 yards off the coast. It doesn't like go like this, like the, you know, the Bahamas, it goes whoom. So this plane when it went down, thousands and thousands of feet. Really? And there were guys that were walking up and down the beach for several days, looking for debris, looking for all this stuff. And the Clemente Museum in downtown Pittsburgh is a really cool place if you've never been to it, because they have some stuff like a plane wing and they have artifacts. Really, really cool place. But, you know, I tell that story and I get goosebumps, and I've heard my dad tell it so many times that I've become numb to it to a certain degree. But at the same time, I'm like, wait a second, hold on. I'm not here. Like,
yeah, man,
I'm not here. And then fast forward to my playing career with Pittsburgh.
Wow.
There was one instance, and I try not to get long winded, but there was one instance. Every year they do Clemente Day, and nowadays you can wear 21 on your back for Clemente Day, which was awesome. They started in 2020 when I was with the Phillies. I got to wear it. I said, I want to do this. It was so cool. But the Clementes would come in, his wife Vera, and the boys would come in for Clemente Day, especially into Pittsburgh, and we would go to a local school. We would support some of the tougher areas in Pittsburgh. And the day that they were in, it was in September. I was sitting on 20 home runs. We were playing the Boston Red Sox, which doesn't matter. But I hit a home run. So I hit my 21st home run.
Wow, dude.
21.
Wow.
21st home run just over the 21-foot Clemente wall in right field on Clemente Day. And it was the only time ever that I've gone, like was going around the bases. You hit a home run, you're like, you're feeling yourself, you're cool. It was the only time, like, I'm walking around the bases and I have goosebumps completely. Dude. And I get to the dugout and guys are looking at me like, wait a second. This is like, you know, call it divine intervention, call it whatever you want. But that was the time. And every time that I got to run out to the field at PNC Park as a second baseman, I was, for the national anthem, I was staring at the 21-foot wall. And I always tried to, like, you know, give a tip of the cap, something along those lines, because I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So I know we're getting a little deep, but
no, yeah, man, that's,
do you?
That's
I think the story is very, you know, it's kind of close to home. So, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Thank you for sharing that, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, what a cool, I mean, we're glad you're here, obviously, for that. We sad what happened to Roberto and everything and the pilot and their families. But, man, what a crazy, yeah. cool, unique, unbelievable story. The fact that he just, like, I wonder why he said that. Like, why was he, right. did he have some feeling? Did he just...
I don't know.
That's just crazy.
The stories I've heard, I've had the opportunity to meet the family. The stories I've heard about that man, like, I don't know, man. Like, God had his hand on that dude, man. You know, what he was doing,
yeah.
the way he carried himself, how he was impacting the world, the standard of excellence he had in his play. Like, that's just, I mean, I know you mentioned divine intervention. I don't know, man. I just felt like he was walking in line with that, bro. Oh. You know, so... that is an amazing, I mean, that is so poetic. That is cool such thing. A poetic nature. And I mean, I praise God you even had that moment, because what a beautiful moment.
100%.
To be able, like, who gets that? Right. One person gets that moment. Right. And it was you, my brother. Like that. Yeah. Wow, dude. That's really a movie, cool, dude.
Well, and I'll be the first to you know, put it out there that they still haven't completely retired 21 across the league. They retired Jackie Robinson's number, which is absolutely amazing. But I'm hoping that eventually they'll get to the point where 21 cannot be worn by anybody, because that's, you know, why not? I mean, he's ambassador for not just the Latin community, but here in Pittsburgh, he exemplifies everything that there is to through a humanitarian ambassador for baseball and, you know, everything that comes across to the platform that we had as professional athletes. And so... You know, you learn, especially in the Pirates organization, if you didn't know of Roberto Clemente, you learn about him very, very quickly when you're in the organization and you try to live your life. Every single day when you're walking down to the dugout, you see a sign that says, you know, if I don't live my life, you know, to make it a better place moving forward, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. And you see that going into every single game when you go into the dugout. And you don't forget stuff like that.
Yeah, man. How could you? That's unbelievable. Yeah. I want to talk about the Steelers, just, you know, because obviously they had a game or whatever. But I do. We'd be wrong not to talk about the Pirates just quickly. And I know you do some. I know you do some broadcasting. You do some of the TV. You do radio or just the TV?
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both. Okay, yeah. I know I've seen you on there, but I'm not gonna like dive into anything crazy, but I do want to say, because I love that park. I think the park is awesome.
Amazing.
And then people I've talked to will easily say it's like one of the best parks on you know, and maybe because of the view, I don't know why they're saying it, but it's just awesome. But we would be remiss if we didn't spend just a little bit of time talking about the was it 3 years in a row, the playoff run that the Pirates had?
Yep.
And just how I went to those games when they were chanting Cueto.
Yeah.
And obviously it didn't. Never really got to like World Series, you know, that stuff. But just the fact that 3 years in a row, was it 3 years in a row?
13, 14, 15.
Yeah, of postseason play.
Yep.
And nothing way before that, nothing since, right?
20 years.
I mean, it's kind of...
Well, there's another 20... We didn't get to 21 years, right? So like...
There you go. 20 years. So obviously, you know, I think, in my opinion, as a guy that's been here for, you know, 20-some years now, Pirate fans, I mean, Steeler fans are, I think all the fans in the Pittsburgh area are, and you grew up here, so you understand it.
Yeah.
Steeler fans, Penguin fans, Pirate fans, they're the best. They love their sports teams. And you've got a great stadium. You've got fans that want there to be a great team. Obviously, that for whatever reason, it hasn't quite translated into great teams.
Right.
But those 3 years of postseason play, the fans will never forget, which that's why I think the fans just want more of it, right? Yeah, yeah. What was it like to be a part of those things? I mean, it had to feel kind of like, I mean, you've gone to Steeler games.
Right.
I'm sure you've gone to some of the Penguins games, like, you know, the postseason stuff. It had to feel like just like that when you're out there during those games.
It was bizarre, especially the 2013 game that you mentioned, the Cueto game. I remember, you know, internally, like in the clubhouse before the game, usually 20, 30 minutes before the game, you're heading out to the field. That was the only game in my entire life that I think every seat was taken up by 30 minutes before the game started. And you could hear it from the clubhouse. You could hear it, which is not normal. That's not normal.
Which is a player does something. Like, I mean, I go to, you know, Steeler games, obviously you hear, but same thing. Like when you're in, like, as soon as you leave our locker room, you start coming down the tunnel and you hear it, it just does something to you. So
100%.
Thank you, fans. Like, you guys are awesome.
No, and that was, and they had a blackout night that night where they wanted everyone to wear black and wave a towel. And I remember getting out to the dugout and being like, holy crap, this is Pittsburgh at its finest. And like I said, I was at two Super Bowls before that. I was at AFC Championship games. I was at Penguin Stanley Cup playoffs. And all those were incredible. But it was something about the anticipation of 20 years leading up to that, right? 100%. People were like, we got back. We did it. And that night was something that I will never, every time anybody asks, what was your favorite moment? Not an individual moment, nothing else. It was that moment because I lived it as a kid in the early 90s. I was 6, 7, 8 years old when the last time they were in the playoffs and made deep runs in the playoffs. And I remember everything. Barry Bonds, Bobby Bonilla, Andy Van Slyke. Those were my guys, right? Yeah. Sid Bream sliding into home, Braves beating the Pirates. I was crying when I was 6, 7 years old. And so I lived it. And then I got up to, when I got to high school, PNC Park came and I was like, this is the greatest stadium I've ever seen. And then I got drafted by the Pirates and we struggled for a while. And then I got to the big leagues and we were still struggling. And then all of a sudden we turned a corner. And when we got to that, when we had that stretch, I remember that spring training of 2013, like Kutch and I were talking, we were like, oh, we got a shot. Like, this is a good team here. Wow. This is a good team. And we hadn't had that the years before. 11 and 12 were okay. We had our stints that were pretty good, but we hadn't gotten there yet. So, and we were like, we gotta take advantage of this. And it was amazing. And like I said, I had opportunities to play in the playoffs with the Yankees, the Mets, some other places. And that was amazing, but there was something about doing it here that I will never forget, and I feel so blessed and fortunate that I had the opportunity to do that here. Hmm. I mean, I would go to my wife thought this was funny, and I sorry to stop you. My wife thought it was funny, like especially during those years. Before that, I got to the big leagues in 9, like 10, 11, 12. Nobody, if I went to Giant Eagle to get something for the house, nobody wanted to talk baseball. People would say, hey, man, hey, how you doing? Pine Richland, this and that. Good luck. Nobody wanted to talk about how the team was doing. All of a sudden, we get to 13, and I'll roll up into Giant Eagle, and I'll pass the meat counter out here like, hey, why'd you guys lose that game on Friday,
It's Pittsburgh, like, Pennsylvania, ladies and gentlemen. Here
we go. I was like, we were trying to lose that game, actually.
Just want you to know.
We won the first two in that series. We were trying to lose that game.
For all you bettors out there. Well, what's it going to take to get back to that?
If you look at how the GM, Ben Cherington, has kind of set up what he wants to do with this organization, this team, since he came here, he's got some serious, serious guys like O'Neill Cruz, Brian Reynolds, some of these guys that are major league studs. And in baseball, you have to be good across the board, especially in the NL Central, where you got the Cardinals every year that are going to compete, the Brewers that have been so good, the Cubs that are willing to go out and get whoever they want. That's just not going to be the model here. And when I watched at the end of the year last year and saw some of the guys that I know will be back this year and most likely be in the lineup and be in the rotation and be in the bullpen, I'm really excited because people will say, well, you got to spend. I get it. I played for the Yankees. I played for the Pirates. I played for the Brewers. I played for the Phillies. I've seen both sides of it. But I'm telling you, if you don't have the right combination of guys, if you don't have a mixture of good veteran players with young players that are coming into their own, that it doesn't matter if they're position players or pitchers, you have to work as a group because you're talking about 162 games over the course of 6 years or 6 months. You have to get that combination right. And I see what he's doing and people go, well, you just went and got a catcher. He only cost you a couple million dollars, but you see what he's doing. Like, this guy, they got this guy from Cleveland. He's a really good catcher. He's a very, very good catcher. He's going to be able to help this pitching staff. That's super important. So I am lucky enough to have a first row look at what's going on. I know people are frustrated, but I also lived through it. I lived through it in 2010, 11, and 12, and I saw the other side, and I see a lot of similarities.
Well, I guess that's reassuring for the fans. I'm going to make a comment, not ask a question, then we'll transition.
Yeah,
because as a fan, I think it's frustrating, and I'm not going to ask you to comment on this. As a fan, I think I'm frustrated, and I'm sure others are because I've heard about it and read about it and saw it, is that, like you say, spend some money. I get owners love making money, but in order to win, you got to spend some money. And sure. So I think that's the frustrating part as fans. Like, you feel like every time we have a good player, they get traded away. And it's like, oh, no, we've got this farm club, and or we got a guy down here, we got a guy here, we're going to – but as the casual fan I see why they're frustrated. You've got a beautiful park. You've got fans that want it. It's like, just spend some money or keep guys. Right. You know, you talked about some guys. Like, I joked the other day, and maybe it's a bad joke, but it's like, okay, when's O'Neal Cruz getting traded? Like, he's a stud. When's he getting traded? But I'm not far off in what fans. I'm not asking you to comment.
Hey,
it's not listen, far off because we talked about this.
I agree. I wore this hat in honor of you.
Thank you.
All right. Last week, I got a lot of flack for wearing a Giants hat. Okay. I'm a Giants fan. Come at me. You know what I'm saying? Like, what it is. What's the, like, I would, man, PNC Park is beautiful. I would love to sit down at this bar, us wearing exactly what we're wearing, and watch Pirates games.
That would be so much
fun. You kidding me?
Right. And so it is. It's frustrating as fans to want it so bad. Yeah. And I'm sure there's fans that have been here a lot longer than us that like truly like bleed sure, it and want sure. it. But it is. It can be frustrating because it's just like, man, you feel like you just had, I mean, I remember like that you had Kutch and Marte and
come back, Kutch.
Who's
come
the
back.
Right fielder? The guy had the
Polanco.
Oh, Polanco. Yeah. I mean, and you guys, I mean, it's just, you guys, they're just the best outfield in baseball.
Yeah.
Movie. But
yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. I don't want
to sit but on too I, long, but I will say to wrap that up, to hear you on the inside, part of the broadcast team, lived it for years.
Yeah.
To hear you say that you are hopeful, to hear your reasoning behind your hope, mm-hmm. I'm very optimistic, man. You know what I mean? Like,
there's some good young talent on that team. You can see it.
So. I'm excited, man.
And I'm an eternal optimist, and it's something that is a character supporter and character flaw, and so I get it. Like I said, I get the frustrations. But Ben's going to do what he feels is necessary under the restraints that he is working with. Mm-hmm. So I get it.
Yeah.
And you just hope that he gets that combination right. Because I'm telling you, that combination that we had, it wasn't the most talented team in the league. It wasn't. But I tell you what, we got it right. We played for each other. Mm-hmm. We played as one group. We knew our roles. And that's so important in a day-to-day aspect from a baseball perspective.
Yeah. And I think... I think that the key to it, I think for me and for fans are, if we are so close and say we keep getting a little better, don't then break it up. You know, like just let's add pieces to it. Like I think that's what people want to see. Like, man, we're literally like maybe a pitcher or a catcher or a first baseman or an outfielder away from being really good. Like let's add it. Let's go ahead one time and spend a little bit on guys. Because I don't know, maybe guys, you know, you played in other places. I know talking to Kutch. I think the players really want to, I think players would like to, and this is me speaking just from talking to some guys and not having all the perspective, but I think people in one sense would love to come play here because of the fans and the
100%,
facility. 100%. I think in the other sense, people don't want to play here because they're not getting any money. But that being said, like, this is to the Buccos. Like, let's, come on, Buccos.
I think we're getting there. Like I said, I'm an optimist and, you know, and time will tell. I think a year from now, I think that, or a year or two from now, we're going to have the opportunity to really add to certain spots, not just like an overhaul. And you hope that they get it right.
You heard it. You heard it first here.
I'm holding you to it now.
Now he does work for the Pirates, right. But still,
hey man,
the insider. This is the insider. It's, so
yes.
All right.
I'm believing you.
I do too. I believe. All right,
dude. I've been to a handful.
I'm selling you, Spence.
Yeah, dude. You got me.
All right.
I'm here, man. Like I've been to a handful of Steeler games, right? And the energy's amazing.
Yeah.
Even when it's tough, man, it's like it is amazing. I've had the privilege of going to a handful of Pirates games, mm-hmm. and it's the most beautiful. I mean, like,
well, you live in Tampa. I mean, you've been to a Rays game, right?
Like, brother, I'm telling you,
it's not the same thing.
No, you go to Tropicana Field to hang out with it. Tropicana Field is just a really expensive bar. Okay, you go to have a couple drinks, and you're like, hey, that baseball game going on right now. Like for a while, that's what was the case. Now the Rays have been good. Like, listen, Rays have been good, and it's been really cool to see that happen for my hometown, but like I would love to see that energy. Because I've only been in Pittsburgh on and off for about 10 years. So I've only ever heard of it because the times when it was popping off, I didn't get to experience it. So I get these stories. I'm like, dude, I know Pittsburgh to be Ben used to tell me all the time, like, dude, it's the greatest fans in all sports. And then his last year, I was able to travel around that season and see it. I was like, oh, I see you weren't just being like, oh, no, because it's our fans. No, they're legitimately Pittsburgh sports fans are the greatest sports fans in all of sports. And it's across the board. And I can't wait for that to happen.
There were people, after that 2013 wild card game we won, there were people jumping off the Clemente Bridge into the Allegheny River.
Those are my kind of people.
Jumping.
Celebrating.
Yes.
Not in jumping down where the police didn't care. I'm jumping in. I've never witnessed something like this from a baseball perspective.
Out of celebration.
Think about that. Jumping off a bridge.
Listen. Hey.
What would it take for you to jump off that
bridge? Yeah, I was going to say, we could like go back to
the polar plunge. I think Kiso does it every year. We don't even talk to him.
You're in here first. Yeah.
He's got enough real estate to keep him warm.
He can take his beer and actually wrap it around him like a robe and stay warm. So
he's got a toga? He's got a beer toga.
A beer toga.
Beer toga.
Well, listen, the sports, like the hopeful, I believe we can has got me juiced. And I think it's kind of rubbing off on the Steelers because this past week we were able to walk away with a dub. Very exciting. I would love to know, Ben, obviously every week we sit down here and we're able to pick your brain. I'd love to know what you saw, what you liked, maybe some of your concerns. And then Neil, as a lifetime fan, and I'd love to hear your take on it as well. So Ben, what do you think?
Well, it's a good win. I thought earlier about 2 weeks ago, I was like, this is a block. They're going to win this game. I saw Carolina go to Seattle last week and put a whooping on Seattle. And it made me like get real nervous, I'll be honest, real nervous. But I saw them go out. I saw them do what they did the week before. I thought the offense goes out and just controls the ball. I mean, at one point that drive in the second half, the first drive of the second half was like 11 or 12 minutes, which is unheard of in football. And they were like that one series was like 1 minute less than the whole Carolina Panthers time of possession to that point in the game.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Like Carolina had the ball for 12 minutes and the Steelers had it in that one drive for like 11. Wow. Something like that. It was like ridiculous.
Wild.
They've been able to go down the field early in games, control the ball, score touchdowns or score points. Oh, no, I forget if they scored a touchdown right away, but score points, but not go 3-and-out. 3-and-out at the beginning of a game is a killer. So I thought they possessed the ball well. I thought defense got off the field. You saw the rush getting back, Alex and Cam and TJ get back into it. It got a little hairy there for a second. There was a crazy penalty during a timeout, which was it went to commercial and it comes back and it's like, wait, how'd they get the ball back? What did I miss? Like I'm like blown away. And then you find out what happened and Marcus Allen goes into the other team's huddle and gets a unsportsmanlike, which just
I want a punchline to the end of that, but brother, do you say to that?
There's nothing.
Hey man, that's a wrong team. That's a wrong team there, brother.
just too much. But at the end of the day, they went to a place. Yeah, the team isn't great, but it doesn't matter. You were supposed to win it. You found a way to win it. You keep the little bit of playoff hope. I mean, it's you need all kinds of help.
Yeah.
But they got a chance. I mean, they got Christmas Eve now with the Raiders coming in who won on one of the most ridiculous plays in all of sports. Did you see that?
I thought that was a joke. My wife told me about that.
The Patriot way? What did Bill
say? My first thought was probably what you're about to say. Like, what do you think Bill said in the locker room after the game? Like,
bro.
Just unbelievable.
As the most prepared team in football.
He did just like this. Like when Spence brings me a stout. Get out.
That's a nice round, my brother. What's this? Bring me a stop. Yeah, legit. Stop. I walked away from that game because I'm like, oh, this is done. Whatever. And then my wife's in the living room like, hey, yo, you got to come see this. Like, that was wild.
Yeah, so, but I thought, you know, it's a really good win for them. They needed that. They went on the road, got it. Like I said, Mitch, I thought, played well. He didn't wow and blow you away, but he didn't do anything to lose the game.
Yeah.
And he managed the ball. He made good plays. He did what he was supposed to do, and he helped them win it. And I thought for him, I was happy for him, proud of him for the bounce back he had from the week before. I thought Deontay Johnson played well. You know, I should have sent him a text, like that little extracurricular he had after that one catch. He is excited.
I was yelling at the TV, bro. I was like, Tay,
come on,
Tay. What are we doing, man? You had him.
And the other thing I thought too when I was yelling at the place where we were watching the game, when Naj got his rushing touchdown, he came one on one with a DB.
Oh, yeah.
And he did nothing but say, There's literally nothing that you can do to stop me.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was thinking, I was literally yelling, like,
poor guy.
Do that, Naj, more often.
Yes.
Like, Naj, on third down, do that. Like, run through that guy. Like, the guy had zero, like 0% chance of doing anything. He could have went for the leg. He could have done, it wouldn't have mattered. Naj went into him with, like, I'm going to throw him off with my arm.
Yeah.
And that's how he needs to run. He needs to run like that more often with that kind of authority, that kind of, you can't stop me. You're not big enough to stop me. You're not talented enough to stop me. Or I am too talented and I am too big and I am too strong and I am too much of a bad man that you can't stop me. He needs to run the ball like that every single time. And so I was just like, dude, that's the guy I want to see.
Yeah.
But you know, I thought the team, they did what they were supposed to do. They went in, they won the game. And, you know, Boz hitting along when I know he wanted and needed that after the week before. I forget one blocked. Yeah. So I was happy for him, too. So that's my two cents. I think that's a good win for them to then come back home on Christmas Eve against a Raiders team that maybe isn't, you know, clicking and doing well. Because they can get this one for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that was my next question is moving forward. I mean, I feel like you've been saying that about Naj since – you guys drafted him. Yes. I remember very early on in our conversation, you're like, yo, if this dude does that, you cannot, you're not going to be able to stop him. And so, it's twofold. I do want to get a little bit of your insight, moving forward, because after Raiders, which this, I mean, what I feel like this could go either way. We're supposed to win it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, man, it's a primetime game. It's Christmas Eve. It's the 50th year. There's a lot of elements here, right? What are we doing here? And then what do we need to do to get Naj doing that more? Is that more of a scheme thing? Is that more of a Naj just...
No, he just got to do it.
Okay.
He just has to do it. And I hope that he says, this is what I can do and I should do, because that dude is unstoppable. And that's what he can be. Now, I get it. He might say, okay, there was one, is a little DB, is one on, you know, not a bunch of other guys around. But when he's gone on the outside, when he gets outside on the outside, I don't care if it's a linebacker, he can do that to anybody.
I've seen him, I've seen him do it to bigger people, man. He is a
very talented, very strong, very big man. So happy to see that. Do you watch the games?
Every game.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Well, what's your take? Not necessarily on this game, but on the season or. And you don't listen, to be honest. I know it's my show. You don't have to say that they're just missing me, okay? I
understand. You know what gets, I have this nostalgia, especially from like your early years of just the ground and pound and controlling the game and playing good defense. And the game is different now, right? Like it's a bend but don't break mentality on the defense. And I totally get it. The talent that these guys have is really impressive.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I'm real good buddies with David DeCastro. He's a really good friend of mine. So I talked to him about some of this stuff, and he sees it from an offensive lineman perspective, especially. And I'm just like, you have all these unbelievably talented players. You got Naj. You got Deontay. You got Pickens. You got Freiermuth. You got all these guys. Like. And he's like, well, it's not exactly that simple, but it is, but it's not exactly that simple. And so I find myself watching the game and just being like, I remember 15 years ago when it was 3rd and 2, there was no way this team was getting a first down, right? And it's just not the NFL anymore. Yeah. And it's not just not how it's set up. So I watch every single game, every single week, and I love it. And I, like I said, I am every single week, it doesn't matter if they're playing the Eagles or the best team in the league or the worst team in the league. I am assuming that they're going to win, and it's just I get it, and so I'm hopeful that things continue to improve. I'm hoping that things end this year on a high note, on a really good note, because I know that's important, especially from your position, the quarterback position, from guys staying healthy, you know, Naj, some of these guys that, to finish on a high note. It's the same thing in baseball. Finish on a high note, go into the offseason, know what you want to do to improve going into next year. So that's where my kind of mindset is when I watch a team. I hope they win. I want them to win. I don't have any thoughts in my mind that they're not going to win, but at the same time, I try to be realistic with like where you are and where you could be, I guess.
Are you a Kenny Pickett fan? Like, were you excited about that draft? Did you think they should have played him as early as they did? What was your thought on that as a professional sports guy?
You know, I like Kenny. I don't know. I don't necessarily think that he should have started day one from the jump. I think that he, I don't know. In my mind, I see him as somebody that if you can build around him, you can build around with such good players, and we can fortify the offensive line. You don't have to ask him to do a ton. You don't have to ask him to throw the ball 45 times a game, 50 times a game. And you hope, I mean, look at the San Francisco 49ers formula. They're doing it with a baseball 40th round pick, right? Like, you know, it's part scheme. In my opinion, it's kind of part scheme. It's part, what are you asking this guy to do? And you hope there's a happy balance, right? And you can speak to that better than anybody maybe ever. But I hope that he doesn't end up having to become in his year 2-3, I should say, being like, go win the game. You were down, we're down 14 points in the second quarter. Go figure it out, win the game. And you're looking at a couple picks here and a fumble here. And a guy is going, well, you know, the confidence is not there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's playing with a lot of confidence now. I mean, obviously he got knocked out, you know, a couple weeks ago, but I felt he was playing with some confidence. And so it'll be interesting to see if he's back this week. What he comes out doing? Is he coming out playing? Is, you know, what's it going to look like? So
did they give an update on?
I have not heard. At one point I thought if they would have lost this Carolina game, I thought they should. I think they should shut him down for the year. You know, he got his work in.
Yeah.
I know there's something to be said about getting as many reps as you can, but there's also something to be said about trying to knock that.
Yeah,
the cobwebs off too.
That's something I was going to ask you about, man. Like two concussions that in your rookie season that put you out at least a week. That seems unheard of.
Yeah.
Like, what's the impact you think that's going to have on the career?
It's hard because, like, I always ask the question: did the second one come because of the first one?
Yeah.
Or was it just completely random?
Sure.
You know, it seems like some people will say, you know, you start to see Matthew Stafford. Kenny, some of these guys that they had one, they came back and played, and they had another one so soon. Well, were they just not ready? Like, I'm not an expert. Like, we can get Dr. Maroon or Onconco on here and figure this thing out.
Yeah.
Mickey Collins, those guys are unbelievable. But, like, is there correlation or is it just dumb luck or coincidence? Like, I don't know what
you got to believe that those things
in
some capacity. I mean, granted, Kenny got body slammed on that second joint, man. It was tough to watch that one, but like, you got to believe it's like a reoccurring injury.
And it seems like sometimes too, the second one is like a hit that you're kind of like, that didn't even look like it was that bad. So that makes me wonder if it had something to do with what was already, you know, lingering around. So that, I guess that's why I would say at some point, I'm not a proponent of ever, you watch me play. I don't give up. Like, I don't want to ever say, listen, I'm done for the season. But at some point, if you're the franchise and you're not going to make it,
right,
you're not going anywhere. Like, it might be smart to shut him down to just preserve him for next year. If he's your guy of the future, which obviously he is because they're built around him,
right,
maybe it's smart to do that. But that's that kind of, okay, give him the reps, get him, you know, used to playing. Because the last few games are against two division opponents that you want to have some experience playing against.
Right.
But
right,
you also don't want to get...
I also think head injuries are different.
Oh.
Like, I feel like you have a stat sheet of like you breaking every bone that you can name or touch or feel, but like there hasn't been a whole lot of, you know, head injuries in your rap sheet there. And I think when you come out and the two injuries you're getting there are like back to back, I think obviously, especially in this league, because they're very, you know, player safety, it's much bigger. But when he got that second concussion, I was like, dang, man, this is your first year, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, that's tough. You got to be very, you got to be careful with that stuff. I mean, I've joked, but it's very serious. The brain is the only thing you can't get transplanted, I believe. Like, literally, like, you can get eyes, I mean, literally heart, everything, yeah. But I don't think you can get a new brain. Right. So,
well, hey, Elon, where you at? Yeah. Elon, what's up?
Let us know.
Where you at on that?
Shout out to Elon.
Let us know that's possible. Spence, bring us one more beer.
And we'll finish it. Let's land this plane. A holly jolly spirit here. I need your
help. Is that eggnog?
I need your help there, big fella. I don't have the opener. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
All right. Well, this has been an amazing Christmas episode.
I'm an alchemist. That's how I could do that, by the way. Let
me read the back of your jersey. What does the back of your jersey say?
Oh,
alchemist. Alchemist. Dude, I went to go read and I didn't realize I was wearing my in-ears. And I just totally yanked it in my ear and it hurts a little bit.
Right? I'll fix that for you.
Yeah. I'm an alchemist. Neil, here's what you have to understand is if I don't mess at least one thing up in the show, it's not actually a show.
It's not a show.
It's just a dream.
All right, I get it.
I poured an entire beer on myself one time. I spilt stuff.
We have millions watching live around the world right now.
I just embarrassed myself.
We wanted to cross over because we were hoping we get some Bucko fans to watch this.
Yeah, man. No better person, man. No better person to bring on.
Yeah. So I brought you in.
Yep. All right. So this is our final holiday ale. It is from Breckenridge Brewery out of Breckenridge, Colorado. We went.
Yeah, I know this one. I know this one. Yeah, I've been there. I've been
in this brewery too.
I've been in this brewery. Yeah.
See, known all these.
Breckenridge Brewery is my favorite brewery out of Colorado.
Really?
Yes.
Have you been there?
No, I have not been there.
You gotta go. It's really cool.
I would love to go.
If we knew someone in Colorado, that would have us out. We can go check it out.
You know what we should do?
Just bring all the stuff too. Bring all the stuff.
We've done that. We've done that.
On location.
I will say though, when we went, I took it all to Florida and we linked up with Pouncey.
I don't know what this is.
One of my lights got broken in the airplane. This one
on the plane?
Yeah, well, just because I just threw it in a bed and they're like, hey, can we stack on top of that? I was like, yeah, for sure. Wow. I'm like, well, you can't do that, brother. I don't know. Yeah. So that's all right. That's all right. I think I got them on Amazon.
It's very interesting.
All right. Yeah. So this is a malty full bottled.
Mm-hmm.
Not bottled. Full bottled? Yeah, come on, guys. I used to talk for a living. Malty full-bodied winter warmer. Okay. It is an ale, is what we're working with. It's 7.1 alcohol, obviously from Breckenridge, Colorado. And the tasting notes is to be determined because it's not on the bottle. So let me know what you guys get. All right, Neil, as our guest, go ahead. Just kidding.
Oh, is he out?
He's out, Ben. Why don't you go? Here, I'll go
you
wide.
You go?
Yeah.
I'm out, but I still tried it.
You're good.
It's not as flavorful as the last couple, but I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Not saying it's a bad thing, okay.
It tastes a little lighter than the last one, but not as light.
As the first
and
one?
Not
as,
yeah.
Wow. A
little middle of the road.
Right?
I will say this. Oh. What's on the back end? It tastes better than it smells, in my opinion.
Yes, yes.
Because the smell just like
I didn't expect it to taste the way it tastes.
It smells like weird.
Yeah, it's not like super like the first one we smelled nutmeg and cinnamon right away.
Yeah.
This one you don't quite smell something distinct.
Okay, so it does smell like malt.
Yes.
It smells malty. Which is, it's a malty full-bodied winter warmer.
Around here, Spence.
Yeah.
It's good having a beer guy around here.
Yeah.
Hey. We like having a beer guy.
Yeah, so should we say that? Like the last couple guys were not beer guys, so it was tough.
Yeah, the last few guys we had a struggle. Beer guys. I mean, it was a struggle. Yeah. They just didn't, you know. I don't want to talk. Were you talking during our last commercial break? Were you talking trash on James Harrison? Listen, Debo, you hear that?
I thought about calling him out on social media, and I thought it was probably a good life decision to not do that.
Yes, it's true.
Well,
Smith says yes. That's yes, good.
Just true. Because you can lift more than him. I mean, I get it.
He only works out one day.
He told us he only goes to the gym one day a week.
Oh, come on. I don't believe that for a second. One time a day, you mean?
He said I only go one day a week. I said, is that for the full 24 hours?
Yeah.
Like, we don't believe you, James. I love you, James. I love you, but I don't believe you.
Listen, James. I'm not saying it.
So I always thought it was funny because the place that I worked out at in the off season for a lot of my career, Cam Hayward, Tyson Alulu, Jesse James, some of these guys would work out in there. And I would just go in there and just be in awe because what we're doing is just, you know, arm care, hip stuff,
bands,
course bands. You know what I mean? We're doing some stuff. And I watch these guys come in and they just like roll off the street in their sweats and it looks like they're wiping the sleep out of their eye and just dipping with like 245 pounds. And you're like, come on, guys.
My man's over here doing yoga.
It felt weird for me to do that in front of, you know, I didn't want to make him feel bad, but it just, these guys are just crazy now. Guys are ladder on the ball.
Yeah, this is very malt forward.
So you've been to this
place. Yeah, this place is cool. Yeah.
I don't remember what it's called, man, but they had an IPA.
The Breckenridge IPA?
I was in Bend, Oregon.
Okay.
And that's when I had it the first time.
Tip my tongue, I can't remember.
But it was delicious.
Yeah.
And I thought, good for you guys. Good for you.
I'm going to go see you someday, is what you said. And I'm going to bring all my gear.
Yes.
And my broken lights and everything.
Yes, exactly. Hey, Breckenridge, you like broken lights? How you like your lights?
Neil, are you a skier or a snowboarder?
I'm a skier. Yeah. So my wife is a tremendous skier. My daughter, who's six, is getting pretty good. I didn't ski for probably, call it 18 years. Basically, I skied Seven Springs and Hidden Valley in these places up until maybe I was 17. And then it was like, oh, you can't do this. You fall on your shoulder or something happens. Can't do it. So I didn't ski for probably 18 years. So the last three years, really, since I retired, I've gotten back and I absolutely love it.
Are you like moguls? You doing it all? Like little mini jumps?
I can do it, but I...
Are you wearing like the white snow outfit with the like the
onesie?
Fur? The fur and
the stuff. Fur hat.
Yeah, the gold goggles and like the fur.
Do you know what I do? I sled.
We'll get you on some skis.
That's a long fall.
Yeah, that too,
that's a long fall for me.
That tube in Seven Springs is for real.
Tube in Seven Springs is fun. I'll do that all day. I'm the guy, I would love when I get invited out there sometime for me. I would love to come out and I'll be the guy in the lodge drinking
the
Christmas ale. I'll be waving at you guys from the edge of the patio as you guys come down and you guys get a little shh, like the little snow up at the end. And you guys would be like, I'll be waving to you, having a beer, and you guys are just like, it's so much fun up here. I'm like, yeah, so is it right here.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, y'all cold out there? You look cold out there.
I'm not cold.
This fire's so toasty.
Hey, everybody's got their lane. You just got to stay in it, right?
They do. I'm going to give you.
I love it.
Football. So we have a little thing, which we obviously don't have to tell you. One of our slogans is when you ball, right, footballing.
Yep.
When you ball, you drink it all.
Love it.
So you can't leave a little bit left.
Yeah, no, that's not going to be a problem. That's not going to be a problem.
Put that in your golf bag. Yeah, we have an issue with you. I have a shirt for you. It'll be fun. We'll get you to sign something to it at some point. Will you? Okay. Okay. And we just give it away to people.
Sure.
Perfect.
People watch the show. And
Yeah, we actually have some giveaways coming up. So stay tuned. Stay plugged into our social channels. That's at Football with Ben on Instagram. Make sure if you guys are not already, go ahead and follow that because that's where you get some information about giveaways. What was the name of the organization that you started?
Oh, it's called East Coast Exposure. That's the baseball program. So for anybody that has, especially kids, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, it's somewhat in its infancy stages, but we're getting to a point where we're ready for this thing to take off. So anybody interested, check it out online.
Okay. And where can they go to find that? Is there a website or
they can, you guys, it's, socials? It's about to go literally like almost about to go viral now. Okay. And essentially there's some showcases and some tournaments that are going to happen this summer. And through my socials and through East Coast Exposure, you'll be able to find all that information.
That's huge, man. So
do we need to like, as someone that doesn't do social media,
so
do we need to ask him for what his socials are?
Yeah, so I have his socials.
Handles. What do they call handles?
The handles.
Is that not handles? The
is it? Is it called handles? I would imagine.
I don't do the socials very well either. I'm learning. I'm trying to get there, but it's a struggle.
We'll get it figured out.
Yes,
we appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having me. This has been really, awesome.
This is fun.
Awesome.
This is great. Our first crossover event was awesome.
Yes.
Are we not? Spence, I don't think we have a camera, bud.
Oh, we don't want that camera anyway. All right, that's fine.
Literally, guess what? Listen. We're going to have our first edit.
Yeah. No, that's right.
Spence just flipped.
Fix it in post. Listen, man. These batteries has been dying, all right?
Yeah, we need some more. We need some more, new batteries.
We have a very legit show going on here, folks. Well, we want to appreciate you guys for tuning in. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but we're about to go on winter break.
We are. We're going to take a little winter hiatus for a week or so. But we're going to come back strong in the new year.
That's right.
And we'll probably do a show before, but at some point, there's a little something in the work, Neil. Well, something in the works, and we're talking about maybe our first live show.
Whoa.
With a live studio audience.
That's right.
At a pretty cool location.
That's right.
We're going to allow some fans some drop-ins to come in. Well, we're going to do something special. I don't want to give too much away because we don't have all the details ironed out yet.
That's also true.
We're going to do a little something where people can maybe buy a ticket and get a chance to get in.
Love it. I love it.
And we'll have a couple special guests. And a special location with food and drinks provided. It'll be so. We'll see what happens.
Ooh.
We're not going to get too excited yet, but we're going to see. So
yes,
we'll keep people updated. But we're going to take a little bit of a break for the holidays. We want to wish everybody out there a very happy holiday season. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Remember, Jesus is the reason for the season.
Don't
just celebrate Christmas because of presents and the fun that you get to have. Remember that. This holiday is really around not because of presents and lights and all the cool stuff, but all because our Lord and Savior Jesus was born.
Yes, sir.
Spread love
on this day. So spread love, spread goodwill, spread all the amazing things that he would be doing if he were still walking this earth. But anyway.
Pastor Ben, tell him. Tell him, Pastor Ben.
We just want to make sure people remember because yes. I think that people lose the season.
Yep.
Yeah, they lose the reason for it. And it's easy to do because we get wrapped up in it. Yep. So, spend a little bit of time this holiday season. Just spread a little bit of love because a little bit of love goes a long way.
Yes, sir.
Be kind and then do something cool for somebody that needs it.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Amen.
Well, I can't say it better than that. We appreciate you guys your time. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Neil, thank you so much. Make sure you guys get plugged into your socials. I'll put it into the description below. Have a very Merry Christmas. Have a Happy New Year. Happy Holidays. And we'll see you guys on the other side.
I feel like we should call it a Hoppy New Year.
Oh!
Thank you, Neil.
Beer thing! Appreciate you, brother. Nailed him!